Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Doc Stanley, fourth in depth, on the plate. Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is fourth in depth. It's the show. It is a Sunday. And as all Sundays, you open up with John Coltrane. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. And we ask that you have your way and your will be our way. We thank you, Lord, for little things which will largely take for granted. At one point, dear Lord, we just thank you for the darkness and Jesus that died, that we may have the right to the tree of life. And that man once said, although we don't live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a Park Avenue bench. And the lady said one time, you're God all by yourself. So we thank you for all things wonderful. Not all good ones come from you. And one point, bless our families, bless our friends, bless the people with tornadoes, dear Lord, homeless. They lost some loved ones. We thank you that we still have our home and our loved ones. We know that there is, earth has no sorrow that heaven can't heal. And we ask these blessings and all other blessings. In the name of your darling son, Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake. Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Depth of the show. It is another Sunday. And the crew is coming in. And they're coming from far and wide. And Lady A coming in on Split Decision. Rooney coming in on Top Rope. The Sea Wings won't be with us tonight. He's on assignment. Dusty will be hopping along, and we know we got.
I'm here.
Who's this?
Hello?
Okay. And in the future, and we've been through this 762 times.
Hey.
We will wait till we are called upon, and if we can't get this straight,
well, you call my name, then you.
You've been called by many names.
I see you starting early tonight.
Very
by the way,
funny.
Let me just say, Doc, if I may, this is Mel Smith Jr., and I truly would want to welcome the vast audience that is the Sports in Depth Nation.
Rooney, thanks so very much. And those of you who came in just now, and you heard that caller, he is not a stranger to the show. He's not a prank caller. He may be a prankster at times, but the one and only, this Daniel Baby Lewis. Nate is joining us again. And,
yeah, I'm here.
I feel like I have a sense of humor.
You know, and, you know, because what I did, I'm giving everybody, now, Lady A, her horse is Split Decision. Rooney,
oh,
top rope. We got, now, Harold's TKO. And said, Nate has joined us with his horse is Right Field. That's with Clemente.
Okay. I like that.
Right Field.
I'll take that.
Right Field. We got Top Rope.
Is Harold here?
Like I said, we will continue to go on without these rude interruptions of people looking for
exactly.
Other people.
I agree.
Is Harold?
I agree.
You know what? I don't know. You know, your horse is Split Decision, a.k.a. I got to try to get a call of Harold. In fact.
I'm on the phone.
Oh, there he is.
Hey, Harold.
Like a fine wine. Harold comes in. His horse is TKO because Harold will carry you for. Harold knows he can take you out in the third round. He's gonna beat you up a little bit more. How many times you heard his voice?
He take you to deep waters and put you out at 12.
You know what? I remember I was dating a young lady and the kids had really messed up the friend of one of the couches. I asked his father, I said, Pa, what happened to the couch? He said, I had to get another couch. Said, what happened? He said, these kids are savages, he said. And I think that the way Harold and Tommy, they were savages. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports and Depth for the show. Hoops should be joining us pretty soon. We got a host of things happening early part of this week. Big press conference. Floyd Mayweather Jr. that signed to fight, Esco that signed to fight him. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Funny thing, too, now, you know, it's funny, because for years, Cotto was the guy that came in here for the big Puerto Rican Day thing, and usually they always try, if they can, for some kind of way, they always try to get a Mexican to fight on the 5th of May, which is, and in our five tag words, Willie Mays is there because the 5th of May is the day before the birthday of the greatest player that ever played a game all around. Willie Mays, who played, as Nate knows, he's doing this tremendous piece on Clemente, he played in Santurce on the team. They had a tremendous team. I remember talking to Don Zimmer about that team. Zimmer was a shortstop on that team. And at that time, Don Zimmer was a phenom, tremendous shortstop. And in left field was the idol and mentor of both Willie Mays and Roberto Clemente, Monty Irvin. And then in center field, right next to Monty was Willie, and then right next to Willie was Roberto. So as a guy trying to hit the ball to the outfield, what chance did you stand? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you got the first base, you had to stay there with an array of great throwing arms. Also on that team was Ruben Gomez, who was a major league pitcher. In fact, he pitched with the Giants. So they had a tremendous team. I read the story where one year Mays and Clemente hit back-to-back. Clemente hit a home run to tie the game. Mays hit a home run to win the game. And they won the championship that year. And as you know, Clemente learned the basket from Willie. And then one year, the great sportscaster, Sal Marciano, keep it where it's at, told me that one year with the score tied and the bottom of the ninth, Willie Mays simply stole home. They went crazy in Santurce, Puerto Rico. As you know, Roberto Clemente was from Carolina. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake, with the Network Rainbow Soul, Sports Network Show. It's a Sunday. And March 2nd, and one of the names in our tag words, we got Sports in Depth, Doc Stanley, Derek Jeter, Willie Mays, Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain on March 2nd, 1960, scored 100 points against the Knicks. Now, here's some amazing stats about that game. Wilt, you know, cut the train down. The game was played in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So Wilt rode the train down and was taking little naps because he couldn't really sleep comfortably because he didn't want to miss his stop. Now, at the game, this is an amazing thing. There's no recorded visual of this game. The Knicks were the they were the second worst team in the league at the time. I don't know how in the world you would never try to document what Chamberlain's doing, but they were the second worst team in the league. There were only two photographers at the game. Only two photographers at the game, and one left at the end of the first quarter.
Yeah.
At the end of the first quarter, Chamberlain had the best night he ever had from the free throw line. He was 28 out of 32 that night, which means he got over one quarter of his points from the free throw line, okay? And amazing as it was, and like with a minute or so left to go, and he had like 97 points. He was asking the coach to let him come out the game. You know, and we're meeting these guys, and the coach, no, stay in. He wasn't going to score 100. And I looked at that year. He had three games that year where he scored. I think he scored 73, 8. They asked, after the word had got out, Bill Russell was interviewed, and they said, hey, you know, Bill, Russ, you got to be amazed. Chamberlain scored 100 points. And Russ had this look of, like, what's the big deal? And they said, well, you know, you don't seem to be amazed. Russ, he scored 87 points already. He said 100 was inevitable. And there was 46 seconds left to go in the game when he scored the 100th point. And he had said that the Knicks defended him so much during that game that, you know, he was amazing to get the 100. And they were doing everything they could as he got into the high digit figures to make sure he didn't elevate to the 100. But he had a shot at getting past the 100-point plateau. But 100 points, 28 out of 32 free throws that night. March 2nd, 1960, Wilt Chamberlain. And it was very ho-hum. I mean, it wasn't no kind of big will to do. A little small mention, Wilt Chamberlain scores 100 points against the Knicks. And the rest, they say, is history. As you know, Chamberlain, the only man averaged 50 points a game for a season. The same year, he pulled down 25 rebounds a game. I may be redundant in telling you this story, but I remember asking the great, the late ABA commissioner, all-defensive first team, one of the 50 greatest players in the history of the NBA, and of the Knicks, Dave DeBuscher. And I asked Dave, and I see Dave now. I said, Dave, if Dipper was playing today, could he average 50 points a game? And the Busher adamantly put his glass down, a look of sort of mild anger and disdain. He said, no, he said, he'd get 70. He'd get 70. Never, he said, he'd get 70. There are some who says they don't understand the power of Chamberlain. Walt Frazier told me the story of how strong Chamberlain was. He said, you know, if you hit Chamberlain's body, he said, Stan, it was like hitting a concrete slab. Johnny Green talked about the time that his hand was inadvertently up over the rim and Chamberlain was getting ready to dunk the ball, and he just let the ball go. At the end of the game, Johnny went by the locker. Hey, Dip, man, I want to thank you for – Dip said, hey, man, come in here for that full round. I'm going to bring the bodies on for no 2 points. And seen by many to be the greatest offensive machine of all time, 50 points a game. He and Bill Russell, only two guys to average over 20-something rebounds a game in their career. And it was Chamberlain who broke the one-game record for rebounds in one game. And I remember Rooney, because we were talking about the other day, and he took a guess. He said, well, 37, Doc. He said, no, 47, Doc. He said, Doc, I can't go higher.
Blew me away with the answer, Doc.
55 rebounds that Dipper pulled down to set the record for most rebounds. And now he is the only center in the history of the game to lead the league in scoring, rebounds, yes, and assists. Dipper said, oh, what? I'm not passing enough? Okay. Led the league in assists. And
Doc, let me just say this very quickly, if I may.
Go ahead.
You know, among his contemporaries that are still with us today that had the honor and privilege of, you know, playing with Wilt and against Wilt, among his contemporaries that are still with us, Doc, despite the 7'4", 300-pound Mark Eaton, the 6'11", super strong Bob Lanier, the 7'7", over 300-pound George Mureson, they say Wilt was then and would still be now the strongest person ever playing this league.
The story of Wilt going to the basket and taking two bodies with him. I mean, Clyde told me, you know, hitting his body was like hitting a concrete. And they said if he was a guy with some sort of really temperament, you know, like a little nasty, he's got 100 points three or four times. But you couldn't meet a greater guy. I once again, all blessings from the good Lord. Got a chance to meet him. You know, we became friends. Not, you know, we call every day, stuff like that. But I remember the last time I saw Wilt, the late Wilt Chamberlain, the great Larry Hardesty, greatest sportscast in the history of New York City radio, African-American-wise, and it was over at the Silver Cup Studios. And, you know, how could I not see Wilt Chamberlain? But I'm looking for Dipper, and I hear this, hey, man, where you going? Who you looking for? And look, it was Wilt. What you doing over there? And I remember the very first time I saw Wilt Chamberlain live. And, yes, in the Sports and Deaf Trust and God Hall of Fame, there's some Wilt Chamberlain stuff here. And he was coaching the San Diego Conquistadors. And I'll never forget this. I was just excited. I was going to see Wilt Chamberlain. The Nets had won the game. And I left the locker room, and I went around, and Chamberlain was sitting down, still taller than me, and he looked down at me and he said, hey, how you doing, big fella? And I remember he invited me and Sal Bresker to his restaurant. He said, hey, man, you guys down in Florida, man, hey, you make sure you guys come on down. And Sal went down there. They picked up the phone and called Dipper, and Sal said, Mel, there's nothing. Hey, first class, note to, hey, you're guessing, Mr. Chamberlain, everything is taken care of. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Network of the show, and the feat of 100 points in one game scored by Wilt Chamberlain March 2nd, 55 rebounds, the one-game record total. The only guy to lead the league in scoring with 50 points per game, at the same time pulling down 25 rebounds a game and played every minute of every. Wilt Chamberlain never fouled out of a basketball game. Another amazing stat by an amazing guy who was a tremendous track player. Boxing is what we'll talk about right now. Real quickly, no, we're going to talk about Derek Jeter. As you know, the first Yankee ever to get 3,000 bases. And that's an amazing stat. And that, you know, the thing that we're going to go to you real quick, you know, the last hit that Clemente got was a double, which was his 3,000 hit. But you talk so much about the story of the the so-called, people thought that he had got a hit earlier, I believe against Siva, which would have been, can you give us that story?
Yeah. Basically, it was the last Friday night of the regular season, and there are only about a handful of games left, and the Pirates had already clinched the playoffs, and so they were going to get Clemente his 3,000th hit and just rest him. And he was going up against Tom Seaver, and he hit a sort of Baltimore chop or maybe a hard ground ball to second base. And I think Boswell was playing second base, and he knocked down the ball but didn't field it cleanly. Clemente got to first, and initially they ruled it a hit and put the message up on the scoreboard, and the crowd went wild. And then the score changed it from a hit to an error. And initially, Clemente was quite mad, but then he learned the score was a friend of his, and really the score wanted his 3,000th hit to be a nice clean hit with no controversy or anything surrounding it. And then so Clemente calmed down, and the next day he hit a double, and the gap was short of, you know, was emblematic of the type of hitter he was. So, and of course, that was his last hit in the regular season.
That was an amazing story, because you bring it up. I mean, a hit is a hit. I mean, that, for all its purposes, was a hit. I mean, and as we can see, the great line my grandfather once told my uncle, Paul, my favorite uncle, and he told me, son, if you got something to do, go ahead and do it, because you ain't got a lot of time.
Yeah.
Imagine how he would have felt in that. Had Roberto not got another hit. I mean, and even if you'd go back and change that, you know, Roberto would have been gone. I'll never forget that great line in the Bible: "The dead of this world is gone forever. It is better to be a live dog than a dead lion." I mean, you get those kind of hits in his career. A lot of those, Ted Williams talked about the inability to be to have speed, which would have helped him accumulate a lot more hits. But I mean, it was a hit, and not only that, I mean, he would have got a hit off arguably the greatest right-hand pitcher of his generation, George Thomas.
Yeah.
I mean, Seaver's in the top five in strikeouts of his generation. He's number one. The strikeouts, his ERA is 2-something. He's the only guy to strike out 200 batters 5 years in a row. I mean, sometimes you got to question that. I mean, I understand, it just shows you the magnitude of the kind of person Roberto was to calm down, but as a friend, he should have jumped on an opportunity to give him a hit, and then the next day, the double just takes care of everything. I think about Dick Young, and Dick Young was known to be a devout racist, which I found strange, but I mean, he took a no-hitter away from Gooden. That was a no-hitter. I mean, Knight said, I made the error. I mean, and you wonder, how do these guys, as so-called guys, do that kind of stuff, Nat?
Well, what's interesting, I definitely don't know the answer to that question, but going back to, as you're speaking about greatness, the greatness of Roberto Clemente is he took care of all of that the next day by hitting that double. Because as you said, if he would have ended, as it turns out, his life with 2999 instead of 3,000, this gentleman, Luke Quay, instead of being, this sort of interesting footnote, would be a lot more, sort of antagonist, or, that act would have been a lot, looked at a lot more negatively than it is now, And so I think that shows the greatness of Roberto to be able to just sort of move forward and take care of it. Something happened, was a little bit, mad, and then he sort of took care of it for his friend. He was almost the greater, Clemente was almost the greater friend by, I'm going to take care of this, by going out the next day and just making it all right.
You got the double. I mean, he probably was going to play the next day. That great line that Marion Borkin always says, Marion B. Borkin, the beat dance with black, bodacious, brilliant, and brother. Always let the better man in you emerge victorious. And it was just, the Scorpion, was just really lucky and blessed that Roberto came up, because, I mean, Al Kaline had, 399 home runs, but, he didn't pursue it to
to a good 400. Me and Mr. Frank Robinson talked about it one time. He was close to 600, hitting 3,000 bases. But he said, you know, no need, you know, pursuing it. So he let it go. But, I mean, it just doesn't understand the mindset of, you know, I mean, Clemente got screwed in 60. How does he rank eighth on the MVP balloting? I mean, he should have won the darn thing, but how does he rank eighth on the balance for the MVP? I mean, it's a sad commentary, but, you know, the racist mindset of the theories never changes this game. September 1st, 1971, Danny Murtaugh fields the first ever all-black lineup in the history of baseball. At third base is Jose Begon, former shortstop. Jackie Fernandez is the shortstop. Second baseman is Dave Cash. First base, Willie Pop Starger. Behind the plate, Manny Sanguin on the mound is Doc Edwards. In left field, Gene Kline. In center field, Al Oliver. And in right field, Roberto Clemente. The first all-black lineup in the history of Doc Ellis in the history of baseball. One more time, at first base, Willie Pop Stargell, oldest man to win MVP and the only man to be co-winner with Keith Hernandez. Dave Cash at second base. Jackie Fernandez was the shortstop. Jose Begon, a former shortstop, was at third base. And left field was Gene Kline. And center field, Al Oliver, what a great hitter he was, too, outstanding hitter. And in right field, the greatest right fielder ever, Roberto Walker Clemente. Behind the plate was Manny Sanguin. And on the mound, the man who said he threw a no-hitter on LSD, Doc Ellis. And September 1st, 1971, the first all-black lineup in the history of Major League Baseball, Roberto Walker Clinton was there. Walker Clemente was there. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, with Blake, with the Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Network, the show. We hit the names now. Willie Mays, Derek Jeter, Will Chamberlain. This is Sports in Depth. And, wow, Mayweather against Miguel Cotto. And Mayweather said at the press conference that for all intents and purposes, Lady A, for all intents and purposes, They don't see a Pacquiao Mayweather fight happening. One reason why, he says, you know, Pacquiao, he says, you know, doesn't have the sharpest knives. He said he personally called Pacquiao, explained to Pacquiao how they could break this thing down, how it works financially for both of them, and how he's really going to make more money this way. But he says Pacquiao kind of reminded me of Ray Leonard when he fought your buddy there, Marvin. Harold, he told Marvin, "Hey Marvin, let's promote this thing, me and you." Marvin said he wanted, you know, the Petronelli brothers to be in it. But Lady A, he says that the way it looks, they're not even looking of doing a Mayweather Pacquiao fight unless Pacquiao leaves Top Rank. And talking to Richard Schaefer now has validated what I've been saying, has validated what Tim Smith's been saying, has validated what George Willis has been saying. Bob Arum doesn't want to make this fight. And Schaefer said, yeah, you know, the guy's his cash cow. He doesn't want to take a chance.
Gee, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. Cool. You know.
What, did it not say that?
That's why you're kicking it. That's why, Lady, I mean, but you know, Lady A, my thing is this. And it's what Ray Charles Leonard said. And he said, there comes a time that it's not about the money, it's about being the champ. And it's why Harold Weston, I was talking about Harold, I talk about Harold all the time. And I was talking about Harold because we were talking about...
Don't talk about him too much, you're going to get me jealous.
Well, you know what? In this case, one thing, it is a man thing. Huh? But it's what Harold said, you know, and Harold said, you know, he didn't want to sign with DK because he didn't want to get locked down to one person. He wanted to have that freedom, that flexibility. And Ray Leonard said, it comes a time that it's not about the money, but it's about being the champ.
But funny thing how everybody that leaves Bob Arum ends up making money after they leave.
Huh.
Funny. Miguel Cotto now, and I don't know too much about all the fighters. Dusty, you probably know more than I do because you know you follow fights a lot in Puerto Rico. But how much money is he making now? He's got his own promotional company. Mayweather now too, right? Mayweather left him, and now he's doing his own thing.
Everybody
and De La Hoya left. And look at De La Hoya. Come on.
Everybody, you're right. De La Hoya, Mayweather and Pacquiao. But it seems to be, and me and Smith talked about, there seems to be something that Bob Arum has.
Okay,
that
Hold on, just a second.
Just go. Did you tie your animal up? Oh, I did the horse. Hold on, guy. But no, it seems to be something that that Arum has that is. I mean, Mayweather said after talking to Pacquiao, you know, he said he's no intellectual there. He's no mental giant. He said, I broke it down to him, and I showed him, you know, from a financial standpoint of view, how he's going to make more money, how it works out better for him. And then my thought is, you know, Arum must have saved his life or something that he, hold on, gang, nobody move. Dusty, come back, yeah. Dusty. Oh, he's like, okay.
Very funny. I'm
it is funny.
Let me try to clear this up here once and for all. First of all, I dismiss totally that it's not about the money. It's about money, number one. Mayweather has gotten on this bag. I don't blame him. He's 35. He's facing 6 months or 3 months. But Mayweather has gotten on this bag that he's Mr. Primary.
Dusty, you know, listen to me. Mayweather showed him where he can make the most money he's going to make in his life.
I reject it. I'm telling you.
What are you telling me? So you're telling me that Mayweather's lying to us?
No.
What are you telling me? Mayweather said, I showed the guy where he can make the most money he's ever made, and he still said no. Why is it nonsense, Dusty?
Let me finish, then you'll understand where I'm coming from.
Well, I did my research. You got 40 seconds. Go ahead.
Now, 30 seconds will then shut me off because I don't have 40 seconds to waste.
Down to 30 seconds.
I'm telling you that when Mayweather goes, Mayweather dictates. And I'm going to give you a whole litany of how he's dictating what Mayweather's going to do in that ring or outside the ring. Number one, the split, which he gave to Coco surprisingly, but there's a rationale, was 65-35 Mayweather.
Mm-hmm.
And 35 Pacquiao. Now, who is the top dog? It's not Mayweather. It's Pacquiao.
Hold on. Back up, Dusty.
I know what Mayweather draws every time he fights. He does not draw more than Pacquiao. And you can stop saying that.
Exactly. Stop it.
Pacquiao's the leading fighter. He's the leading fighter that draws more than anybody in the sport. That's the reason why he's out there. And that's come Aaron don't need a Mayweather. Mayweather does something like about a million. Pacquiao does 1.2 million, 1.3 million. And that's guaranteed.
So you're telling me that Mayweather's lying?
Yes.
Yes.
He's building himself up for nothing.
Hold on. Mayweather and Richard Schaefer are lying.
Yes.
Well, you know, you have a bad habit, Doc. You don't let people finish their thesis.
I don't have a bad habit if I have an opinion on my show.
I got a point.
If I got a point, I will say it while I'm ready to say it.
Well, let me have my point.
What you do, you back up and let me
No. Dusty,
okay.
Let me explain this to you, Dusty. Let me
no,
tell you, baby. When I mess up,
you
say, it gets said.
No,
it gets said.
You really are.
It gets said.
Because you want to dictate it.
Dusty,
no,
if you
no,
have
you
a
really
problem
are.
With that, hang up.
No, when I got something to say,
it gets said. It gets said.
No, you're wrong.
No, it's not wrong. It's not wrong.
Yes, you are.
If I have something to say, I'm going to say it. Now, I'd love the point that you and Harold are going to enlighten me, but
if
I have something to say, when I got to say it, I'm saying it.
If you let us
finish,
you dictate and dictate, man.
Go ahead. I mean,
you let us
finish. How are you going to tell me I can't say
so? You know where we're coming from.
I don't care if I don't know where I'm coming from. Tell me, correct me, but don't tell me that I can't stop and say something.
I am telling you correctly. You're not the only omnipotent that knows everything.
You and Hal got the facts.
I'm telling you correctly.
We want the truth. We want the facts. But don't tell me I can't.
Well, I'm giving you the facts.
Well, give it to me.
Facts are. But this man claims himself above Pacquiao, and he's not above Pacquiao. Everybody caters to him. Now, number one, he came up with a package. From now on, anybody who fights Mayweather, 65-35, and he keeps all the pay-per-view because he made pay-per-view. That's bullshit. That's number one. Number two, the only reason Cotto accepted 65-35 because he said, let's go back to Bob Arum. Because he said, I stand to make 30 to 35 million. And that is the most money I make in one fight that I made in the 10 years of Bob Arum. That's the simple bottom line. Okay? Now, Cotto has his pay-per-view in Puerto Rico. That's his. But your boy Mayweather walking around telling Pacquiao, you're not the sharpest knife, that bullshit. Pacquiao turned around. Okay? This is cool.
No, go ahead.
I got my money. I got the money that my promoter's giving me, and I accept it. If your promoter, Mayweather, is not giving you what you want, well, then we can go parity. Mayweather turns around and says, the hell with it. I ain't giving you parity. I'm the one that's the lead man here. You take what I give you and no pay-per-view. Now, let's go back to history. You got to do history. When they first were announced, it was a parity, $40 million apiece. Mayweather comes up with the wolf tickets of drugs. He's come up with every obstacle. I mean, come on. Who is he? A nobody.
Hold on.
Let me tell you another thing. He now is going to go, I don't know if you folks heard it, he's going to go now to the boxing commission where they have the fight in Las Vegas, and he's going to be mad that the boxing commission authorizes him to wear 8-ounce gloves instead of the 10-ounce gloves. Is he crazy? He's going to run the show himself to his benefit. Is he crazy?
Didn't Ray Leonard do that against Hagler?
I don't care about Ray Leonard.
You know what? This is sickening of this whole sport. Everybody's got their own rules, okay? This boxing is so stupid today. It's sickening for me even hearing people talk about what they want, how they want it. You make
Absolutely.
One rule, you follow the rule, and that's what it is. The boxing's been here before Floyd Mayweather has ever came to the sport, okay?
Floyd Mayweather
is not a god, all right?
Harold, what is the big problem?
You got illiterate people that's running the sport today that don't know nothing about the sport, and that's the reason why it's going the way it's going.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dying sport, and if you don't start making some moves, and people, this sport is nothing anyway, because nobody even talks about this sport anymore.
Harold, you bring a point up. In Brazil, I did an interview, and the guy is saying, and you've been saying this, Dusty's been saying, and I'm not people, the sport is dying, and you and John said this 25
years ago, that the game was inundated, saturated, injected with people who had no idea. And you look around at the guys who wind up with promoter license, the guys that wind up. But the question here, to both of you guys, question here, Harold, is it seems to me then that boxing, because you know you are a one man show, and if you can get Dusty a license, it'll be to you. It seems to me, Harold, and it's sad and touching in your words, and it touches my heart because how much we love this. It seems to me, Harold, that this sport is going to die.
I agree. If there's no changes in the next 5 to 10 years, this sport is finished.
You know what, though? I think it all lies with a few things, Doc.
The whole thing is going to happen. What's going to happen is this. You're getting unknowledgeable. You're getting guys. Everybody's a trainer now. That's the bad part about it, okay? Everybody can be a promoter, all right?
Exactly.
And it's the saddest thing that you're getting commissioners that don't know nothing about the game that's being appointed because their cousin became governor or whoever was their friends and they're promoted commissioner. And the fact nobody's going. See, it amazes me to this point. Okay, let me give you a good idea what I'm talking about. I will come to want to be a promoter. Let's say nobody knew who I was. I would need reference from 20 people because I'm black to get a promoter's license to be a promoter and have how much experience have you been in the boxing business to be a promoter. Now we get other people that's running around here can get promoter's license and say I'm one of the big phone because they got money behind them and everything.
Exactly.
Don't know nothing about the sport and trying to put two men together and trying to say I'm putting competitive matches on and mostly all the fights that we look at today is one-sided. And my point is that this should be like baseball, like hockey, like all
basketball,
we should
basketball.
Have a commission or somebody have to go through a chain of command or you got to go through a process before you can get a license or you get coming to the sport because now it is so open,
Doc.
It's just ridiculous.
Doc, can I say something?
Absolutely.
Hello?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Commission's a weak knee. Political hack. That's what they are.
I was just going to say that I just believe that it's just getting to the point where it's just too many things that need to be changed. I mean, first you're talking about, first and foremost, realize that in general, in any sport, you know, it's only going to be as strong as the people that police it. And, you know, it has to start from there. And it's going to trickle on down, like Harold was saying. You got a weak commission, then people are just going to run amok, you know, and do what they want to do. And it's sad because it's a sport that's just like we've been discussing for so long. There's just so many obstacles that have to be overcome in order for it to be successful. You're talking about, like Harold said, from a promotional aspect, you got that. You got the judging now that's been being in question for years now. You got the commission now. You know what? You got athletes themselves saying, no, I'm not going to fight this one unless this one tests and does Olympic-style testing. Oh, no, but I want blood work, and I want urine, and I want this, and I want that. I mean, you know, you got everybody making and forming their own things, and it's like, what's going on? The sport is dying because now you got people that don't want to watch the sport because they're questioning the integrity of the sport.
Which has always been questioned.
Don't forget this. The fight, we have a fight that night. The fight gets stopped. It's over. But they change the decision next week.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Harold, what about everybody that bet? Are they getting their money back?
Yeah. Dusty,
I want, you know, and I was going to suspend you, but I'm going to let you come back next week anyway.
So, family, I couldn't care less. Give me a life term. Well, not parole. I couldn't care less.
Oh,
let me ask you guys a question.
Hold on. Dusty, you don't want parole? Dusty, have you have
too. Have you noticed too? Not only has this deterioration happened in the ring, but it seems to me, and you've been out there 2 or 3 years. Now, people talk a lot about Keenan, but Keenan seems to be one of the few guys who knows how to do boxing PR. But I mean, the other day, I mean, it even seems
right.
From a PR standpoint of view, it's horrible, Dusty.
Yeah, I know. You saw that the other day, right? You experienced how it was horribly handled at the Apollo. Planet Hollywood, yeah. Mm. But, I mean, these people don't know how to handle it. I mean, Harold said it from the very beginning, and I've been echoing the sentiments from back and forth. I don't know who said it first or who said it second, but the fact of the matter is that we have a destruction. The original amateur hour is not in the Apollo, man. It's in every boxing commission. When the steroid charges came up and Mayweather comes up with the USADA thing, where was the stand of every commission across the state saying, hey, wait a minute, you don't dictate out. We have the most stringent drug testing. You're not going to come in with some ad hoc company and supersede us. Nobody said a word, not even New York City. This is what I'm trying to... Now, this young man, which, yes, I admire and respect him, he's going off ad hoc, and he wants to run the whole boxing game. And he's dictating to... You know, he's doing so many things, and nobody has put a stop to him. Said, no, you can't do that. No, you're wrong. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if he turns around and gets an okay and approval from the Las Vegas Boxing Commission, his hometown, to use 8-ounce gloves. And you know, that's taboo. You don't do that. I think, Harold, correct me if I'm wrong, from 35 ounce down, it's 8-ounce. From 47 ounce up, I think it's 10 ounces.
Right.
Now, he
that's
wants,
in the rule.
He wants, right. It's still there. So now
okay,
he wants
hold
to
on, gang.
To,
so 8-ounce gloves is from welterweight down, 10-ounce gloves is from
35 down.
What's that?
They changed it was from welterweight down a long time ago, but they changed
right.
it.
We're not simply talking about just Reyes gloves, which are more punches gloves, but we're talking about gloves in general.
Harold, my feeling here is that this whole thing started to Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soda Channel Sports Network. The show we've been harping a lot on boxing. We got Nate with us. He's going to be leaving the tent. So, Nate, we'll get back to you in baseball. So it seems to me, Hal, that this whole thing, and I'm not saying it because you're my man or stuff. You know, a lot of this, first of all, when Madison Square Garden got out of boxing, and that's when you left as matchmaker, and also even before you got into an administrative level, it seems to me that this game took a downward spiral from the very simple thing, and Dusty harps on it too, when the weigh-in was taken away from the same day, Harold.
Oh, well, yeah, it was a lot of things that was poked at. I mean, yeah.
So what else?
When they started doing the weigh-in the day before the fight, all right, when they came up with the excuses of you know, saying that, you know, fighters lose energy or whatever the heck they were trying to blame it on. I mean, they found a couple of doctors to verify. I mean, you couldn't get 12 doctors agree on one thing in life nowhere in
absolutely.
The field. I mean, that's bottom line. The other situation is that they started coming up with the gloves issue. And then the most funniest thing that I really am against, and it just doesn't make no sense, they got this whole thing where Sugar Ray Leonard started, this weight situation where a guy's fighting 160, he's a 160-pounder, but he got to weigh 158 or 157 no more for another guy to fight. And he's the champion.
Exactly.
And that's all stupid. I mean, if you're in that weight class, that's what you got to fight. You can't come up with 150. But they got all these guys that's trying to be these prima donnas, is walking around and making these catch weights. That doesn't make sense, okay?
That makes sense
of having certain weight classes for guys defending titles if you're going to have a catch weight and you're going to bring a catch weight under 160 pounds or 147 and saying you can't weigh no more than 144. And
absolutely,
that's stupid. They should just get the commissioners or whoever's going to stand up and say, we're going to stop this. This is, you know, you're in the middleweight, you're in the welterweight, you're in the lightweight, and if you don't want to fight those weight classes, don't get in there, go into another weight class that's upper or
exactly
down. Simple as that.
You know, you guys think
that's
that maybe
it,
some of it has
bottom
to do with the I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dusty. I'm sorry.
But
right,
this lady A has nothing to do with nothing. You're in a weight class. That's what
exactly
you're fighting.
Well,
if you don't want to be in that weight class, then get out of it.
My question was going to be to you, Harold. I mean, doesn't every state have their own commission? Shouldn't they just have a unified, like, one commission and that's it?
Well, you know, lady,
that's the problem that Harold and Dusty have been saying.
There's no, but Harold, but
well,
and,
well that's what my
no
my problem is. Shouldn't there be one unified?
Was there ever a uniform set across the board?
Harold?
There was, and the strongest one at the time, and everybody was listening, was New York.
Okay.
When the New York Boxing Commission was in control, because they had, really New York made the champions back in the day, back in the old days. Okay.
And that was
they
because of Madison Square Garden, right?
No, yeah, but because New York was strong, it was the Mecca, and everybody fought here, and New York was paying more money, and New York was strong. So New York was the one that was crowning all the champions. They were the one that was sitting all the ratings and all that. New York City. That was, if you were the world champion, you had to go through the New York process
of getting
rated and all that. All right, and that's the way it was. But then, as time came in, then things started changing. WBA came in and started the process.
Little sanctioning bodies, yeah.
And they started their little sanctioning bodies. Then it went down like dominoes. You know, here they came. You know, everybody's coming out the woodwork.
You know, there was one time, and I'm talking about my time in the horse and buggy ages, that the commission was such a controlling force. Well,
yes,
you know, I like discipline, and I enjoy where they were coming from. Whereas, first of all, you didn't know, Harold, you can back me up on this or contradict me, but you didn't know who the judges nor the referee were for fights to avoid collusion, bribery, or any intimidation of their voting process. You only knew who the referees were the day of the fight and who the judges were. I remember those times.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. These those commissioners and those judges and those referees wasn't no priests, all right? I mean,
right,
they did their little shaky things and all that. I knew some things that would happen back in the day, and I.
Such as, come on, Harold, talk to us, baby. Touch us. What happened?
No, I can't say nothing. I'm gonna take it with me when I go leave here in this earth. But my point is that it was things that was happening. But one thing about it is that you did know the honesty of these guys. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It wasn't no shaky situation. What is going to be is what is going to be. It was about following the money, and that's the way things were back in those days. But at the same time, if you had the talent, you did win, you got what you was going to get. You were going to win the decision. But I got to say this. They had things under control. Let me give you this point. Ali became world champion. Ali did not go into the Army. They took his title away. New York City took his title away, okay? And my point was that that's how strong the Boxing Commission
and it's funny you said it, Harold, because when you talked about the power and strength of New York City, is when New York did that, everybody else followed suit with the exception of the WBC. And I remember New York, but also was the thing, you know, New York had the Garden, New York had the press. But you know, when you talked about the power and fortitude of New York City, I remember when New York City stripped Ali, everybody else followed suit with the exception of the WBC.
Absolutely.
Everybody said, hey. Now, what I'm saying here, Doc Stanley Sports Depth on the Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports and Depth is the show, and we're just getting into, I hope it's educational for you. We've definitely got a solid hour coming that, so we'll get back into some other things. And the amazing thing, Ali was really, you look at, hey, here's a guy that wound up saving the game, and here's a guy that brought so much into the game. And you look at people say certain things. You know, he came in, then he changed his religion. He became a Muslim. He stayed vocal. You talked about, you know, how he saved the game. That's amazing in lieu of what had happened. Now, you're talking about the all these different things, and you talked about because it always said, you know, they talked about things that, but you know, back in the day, it was a known fact that Blinky
Palermo and all those guys,
they ran boxing. I mean, you know,
well,
Ray Robinson.
All the guys were
gangsters, man. Yeah, all the guys were gangsters. They were walking to Stillman's, and you knew who they were. You shook their hands, and you knew that these were the connected dudes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was something that the commission looked at, but then looked at with a jaundiced eye, because they
Why, Dusty?
Why? For the simple reason that
it was in their best interest to do so. That's not Let me say something right quick, Dusty and Doc, okay? We have to remember that boxing is a business like everything else, okay? It's a business. People are in it to make money, all right? Everybody is looking out for number one and what is best for them and their people. That's why they make these little side deals that Howard was alluding to earlier. Who am I going to make the most money with? Who's going to bring me the most business? What is going to be best financially for me and my crew, okay? Money green is the bottom line. And I have to take issue with you, Doc, and you and I have been having this slight disagreement for years, okay? Mm-hmm. When it comes to professional sports, it's always about the money. Don't kid yourself. Don't look at this with rose-colored glasses. When it comes to professional sports, it's always about the money.
All right, yeah, but, you know, with the problem with boxing, it has come to the point where it's not about the fighters. It's about the darn promoters, okay? And that's where the downfall is in the sport. Because more it's not like football league or the basketball league.
Major
baseball. This boxing is about the promoters, what they're putting in their pocket. What boxing was back in the day was about the managers and the fighters trying to make money if their fighter was good, okay? Even if the fighter was bad and they made some hanky-panky decisions or they made some hanky-panky deals, but it was still about the boxer and the manager. It isn't about the promoter. Today, it's only about the promoter, and the promoter is the one that's destroying the sport. And that's where we're at in this sport.
Harold, when did you, because now, you know, you were a guy that's on both sides of this thing. You were the guy that was doing the fighting, and you were the guy that wind up people did the fighting for. Rooney, the point about dollars and cents is no question, but we all have to understand, too, it's about who makes the dollar and cents.
Yeah,
and
but you guys are leaving out the main person. That really counts here. You're missing out. It's the fan. And if you don't have the fan to pay the money and the fan wait a second, hold on. If you
don't have
a fan sitting in a seat and that's not paying for the show, you're never going to make money. And that's why people are losing their interest.
But you know what? There's two things here, Lady A. You know, Michael Katz said, you build it, they will come. Boxing fans are the most intelligent fans in sports. But no, fans are that. They're fanatics. So they're going to come. If the papers write to certain things, they're going to read it. Rooney, getting back to you. It's about dollars and cents, but it's about the complexion of the people who are making the dollars and cents. And that's the point we can never forget. Now, Harold, how taken back were you when you went into the other side and you saw what you had just told us, that all of a sudden it's no longer about the manager and the fighter. It's no longer about, as Lady A says, the concern of the fan. It's about the promoter. And people always point the finger at Don King. I always said the amazing thing about boxing, that everybody falls in the mud, and Don was always the only guy that came up with mud on him. Nobody else did, which was bullcrap. When did you see that, Harold? When did you see that? Oh, my goodness. When, Harold?
When Don King got into the sport.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
He ruined it. He ruined it because when he started talking about signing fighters up and fighters should not go, like I can fight. I can fight on Friday and fight 2 weeks later somewhere else on another Friday, okay?
Absolutely.
Right now, if I'm fighting for Don King or anybody, only day I can fight is that Friday. I might not fight again for another 3 more months. My point is that
That's not the way the sport is for the been brought together. The sport is about the fighter. The fighter making a livelihood, bringing entertainment to the public. Like Lady A said, the public has got to be involved. This is a sport. This is entertainment. And that's what people are paying to see. Right now, it's not being paid. The
thank you.
Being paid now is just for the promoters.
Thank you.
To get their flunkies, whatever flunky fighters they got, and pay them out there and make money and tell the TV, whoever the TV network guy is.
And you know what? And Harold, it's like Harold says too.
$1 million to say you can have your fighter. The fighter's 20-0, but he can't fight anyway. And they said, oh, this is a great fighter. And that's where the downfall. It's about more about the promoters making their money, putting their money in their pockets, instead of the fighters and the managers maintaining and getting money for the sport and entertaining the people. That's where the downfall is.
Yeah, but Harold, like you were saying before, Harold. Harold, you were saying before about the fans being. Yeah, it is relevant because the reality is, just take a fight like the other night, Dusty. Back me up on this. The fight with Adrian Broner and this kid Elroy. I mean, are you for real? Like, what was that about? The intelligent fan is going to look at that fight and say, what? Devin Alexander and Maidana. Really? Look at how Maidana fought that fight. You really thought that was a great fight? How many clinches took place in that fight? What kind of footwork was he doing in that fight? Look at him in the fight. Look at Maidana. He was parrying every shot, but he wasn't even getting a shot off. It was like a real somebody that wants to see a fight is going to want to go in there and see two gladiators duke it out. Was that a real fight? You really thought that fight was a fight? How many rounds did you get to Maidana? Two? I mean, give me a break.
It was just a fill-in for Saturday Night Live. That's what it was.
No, that's what it was.
Gang,
let's take a break. Let's take a little break here.
But what I'm trying to say,
Nat, are you still with us, Nate?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on a second. We're going to take a quick break, do the our disclaimer, come back with Nate's got a few minutes. We'll talk a little quick baseball and get back to boxing.
Ladies and gentlemen. I'll hold my breath, Doc.
I said, yeah. No. Don't hold your breath. Go to the kitchen and come back. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't get any better than this. You know, and you've got two guys who were in there. We're talking boxing. You're learning some things that you never heard. I told you, Sports In Depth brings it to you in depth, informative, insightful, and things you've never, ever heard before. Unfortunately, Howard's going to take some things to the grave with him, so we can't dig that out of Howard. Maybe we'll go down to the graveyard to get it from later. We'll be back in a minute. Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth on the plate. We're on every Rainbow Soul channel. Sports In Depth for the show. They're here. Harold Weston Jr. on TKO. Lady A on Split Decision. Top Rope is Rooney, and right field is Nate. Dusty, we keep changing names for this horse, but Dusty is always here. Ladies and gentlemen, don't move. We'll be back in just a minute. Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports In Depth for sure. It's another Sunday night. It's hot, it's heavy, it's informative, it's intellectual, and it's the best sports radio show, not only in New York City, not only in the United States, but in the world, on the planet.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Last month was Black History Month. This month, Women's Month. Just to mention, the first African American crossover group and Marilyn Monroe leads the Girls Song. Women. So many. Tammy Wise. We're talking about Ella Fitzgerald. Billie Holiday.
I've been trying to reach it all day, but no one
has
to tell me why.
Blake Radio, Blake Radio, the sports step in the show. If I can say we're going to come back. Thank you, Marilyn.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities.
Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth! On the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul of the Channel, Sports in Depth is the show. The crew is here. Lady A on Split Decision, Harold Weston Jr. on TKO, Rooney on Top Rope, Nate from Right Field, Dusty, he picks a name every different week. Sea Wings, touchdown, he's like, where's the night? Now get back to you, because I know you got to run pretty soon.
Doc, before you do, Doc, I just want to remind you, if I may, please don't forget to inform our vast Sports and Depth Nation about your incredible and historic memorabilia collectibles.
When Nate breaks, we're going to, it's funny you say that, because I was looking at, me and Harold, I mean, we go way back. I mean,
God, Doc, I got to say something. Don't go into the whole cheesy picture you were trying to spawn off on me last week.
Hey, you know what? I can't find that picture. You got it?
I take that. I don't want that cheesy black and white picture.
Hey, she got it home on the wall, baby.
Please
bowing
stop.
Down with a candle every night.
Listen. You need to stop that.
I was going through some stuff, and as you know, Doc Sandy Sports Def on the
black. I want that cheesy picture for, seriously, Doc, with Harold with the part and the afro and everything. I want that.
I want you to go to DocStanleySports.com.
I want the real Harold.
That's my site. Hey, this ain't the dating game. Cut it down. Cut it out. This ain't the dating game. DocStanleySports.com. We're going to get back to that into a minute, but, I'm going to Brazil by the end of this year, and I'm putting together the Trust in God, Sports in Depth, Entertainment Hall of Fame. And I was just, sometimes I'm like amazed by some of the stuff. But, nothing's amazing about when the good Lord bless you. And I was going through this briefcase, and Harold's on here. Jose Torres is on it. Larry Holmes, Ray Mercer, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, Lennox Lewis, Ali,
it's crazy.
The DK.
It's crazy.
There's the guy that you helped in his career, too, Harold. Davey Moore, right across is your man, Tommy Hearns. Donald Curry is here. And I remember when I got this briefcase, because, Harold, it was the night that Tyson fought the first fight at the Garden, because Milton McCoury and Donald Curry were going to fight for the undisputed welterweight champion of the world. And I was like, this guy Tyson, I wasn't too sure about it. So I had him sign the inside of the jacket. I don't know how good this guy is going to be. But we'll get back to the memorabilia. And the sport, well, actually, we'll say artifacts. But Nate, you're listening to Harold and Dusty and Lady A and Mel Cosell telling it like it is. Howard Cosell. I know Joey Goldstein passed away, and they said he was an amazing thing about Joey Goldstein, because he had Dick Young, Howard Cosell, and Red Smith were all close friends of his, and they all disliked each other, but they all loved the late, great Joey Goldstein. Now, you're looking at the lack of formality, the lack of regulations, the lack of constraint in boxing. Is baseball that much better? And yes, why? And no, why?
Actually, I was just thinking about that when I was listening to this conversation. I think baseball, it sounds like baseball's sort of on the same path. I mean, when you look at the numbers, Bud Selig likes to talk about, attendance, records in attendance or attendance is up and all that. But honestly, a lot of that's because they got all these new stadiums that were built. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, like in Pittsburgh, for instance, we were getting like 6,000, 7,000 a game at the old, Three River Stadium. They built a new stadium, and attendance doubles and triples, but you can't build new stadiums, every 20 years. The fact of the matter is, you got to look at the ratings on television. And I think two World Series ago, I saw one of the World Series games was beat out by three different CSI shows. There's actually higher ratings on television for three different CSI shows, like Miami, you know, I don't know what they are. But then the baseball World Series. So if people are not, you know, watching on television, that's where the money is. The money's on TV. Just look at the NFL. I mean, there's some NFL, you know, teams that don't sell out, but they still have made money before they've sold one ticket or anything because the television money is right through the roof. So I think, you know, it's exactly right to look at the leadership and that there needs to be strong, you know, there needs to be strong unity, you know, or there needs to be a strong direction, you know, at the top. And by the top, I mean, you know, a combination of, you know, the players' union and the commissioner and the owners. And if you look at football, you know, I think there is strong leadership, even though they butt heads, you know, and there's friction. At the end of the day, you know, as we looked at last year, there was no, you know, there were no games missed besides the, you know, Hall of Fame game in Canton. So I think it really is about the leadership at the top, you know.
Speaking of the leadership, let me ask Nate just a quickie before I know you have time. Are the Wilpons ever going to, New York fans are totally disgusted, Nate, with the Wilpons and this austerity program, you know, the whole made of thing.
Yeah.
What is it going to take for them to sell out to somebody, a Mark Cuban type, who wants to come and send some money and win?
I don't know the exact answer, but I think that goes to leadership with Bud Selig. Like, it doesn't seem like they want Mark Cuban or an owner like that in baseball. I mean, he's put in bids for. I think they're just living in the past or something. You know, I don't think they have.
You know, it's funny you said that because the first thing that popped in my mind was old money just doesn't like new ideas, and it's kind of stringent on those old ways.
And the big fact, lady, that they can't control them from a financial standpoint of view and from a verbal standpoint.
No, but also creative new ideas. Like, some of them, they don't want to take risks. They feel like what they have is gold, so they don't want to take any risks that, you know, could probably propel them, you know, in a positive direction. They just want to stay with what they know.
Exactly. I mean,
is it individual ball players that want?
No, it's just the powers that be. Not, you know, and this has been said for a long time. With the exception of Mountain King Joe Landis, who was the guy that kept the blacks out of baseball, but he was the guy that was wouldn't care, they say, all the white ladies for Jack Johnson. It's been long said that the commissioner, per se, is lame duck. He's definitely just a mouthpiece for the owners. Maybe with the exception, I'm looking at Faye Vincent, may have been the first one that took a little stand, and they kind of got him out of there. Can you kind of decide, is there any substance to what I just said about Faye Vincent being maybe the one guy that that took a stand and was serious, but per se, the commissioner is just a puppet for the owners?
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those positions where you have as much, where, like, that's the perception, and it's like anything in life, you have as much power as you decide to assert yourself, you know, so that, you know, a commissioner can, you know, assert themselves as much as they want, kind of like the head of the United Nations. You know, they always say, like, they want to pick a weak head of the United Nations so that the people can, you know, manipulate that person, you know, but there's been times like Doug Hammarskjöld, I think was his name, where they exert their power, you know, where they get that position.
Let me ask you a question. What about this Bud Selig, who retired? He was tired and all that, but then the good old homeboys got together and they offered him a higher package deal and a 2-year extension because he was such a good commissioner. What does that say about the integrity?
Do you think money had something to do with it too, Dusty?
Oh, you better believe it. He got a 2-year incentive package to stay, but the headline was, he's such a nice guy.
Exactly.
You can get me as commissioner. I'm such a nice guy. You know. But the fact of the matter is that they go out and quality hunt for a person of color and let Selig go and made that person
Dusty, it's an amazing thing that you bring it up, and you always do, which is such a tremendous point. Because, you know, you look at all the people of color who get a position and they're somehow systematically deleted out.
Exactly.
I remember Bill White telling me.
Basketball, baseball, and football.
But baseball is the greatest. Bill White told me, I see Mr. White now. He resigned. And I said, you know, Bill, how many? He said, because they're not going to change. And it's amazing.
Exactly.
You know, now everybody confirms that Willie Mays is the greatest player to ever play the game. So how can anybody's baseball be worth more than an autographed Willie Mays baseball? Pittsburgh guy, Clemente. Here's a guy that was seen as a hypochondriac. He went 3 for 5. He can't be sick. He's always griping. Could you address that for us?
Sounds like Manny Ramirez.
Don't that lady, eh?
Well, as far as these, like, getting to the top positions, look at, and if you look at, like, what Tony Dungy and some of the other coaches have talked about, in football, it's always, and in my mind, just looking at it, it's always about from the ground up. So it's always about, from day one, as far as from having good, you can go back to having good school systems, having people getting the opportunity to get assistant coaches, or having the opportunity to work their way up through the system when you only get, so few people that are allowed to get the opportunity to get the lower jobs, then it's going to be almost impossible, for somebody to get the top jobs.
There's no lateral entry.
If you can't be the janitor, how in the world can you be the supervisor?
Exactly.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So then you look at it and it's like, how many candidates are there? And so it goes much deeper in my mind, and you can go as deep as you want to go, but it goes much deeper than the individual hiring process. It goes to the candidates and how that happened,
My question then, since you brought that up, would then be, then who is in charge of the selective process? Because now you have to go through another perspective of looking at it, which is like, you're 100% right as to who those candidates are going to be, but then out of that, then who is the person that makes the final selection?
Well, lady, you bring a good point up, and I remember Gary Ward, Doc Stanley Sports Network, the Blake Network, Rainbow Show, the Channel Sports Network Show. This is the best 2 hours in sports radio you're going to hear, be it United States, Jupiter, Mars, Brazil. Hey, the crew, you can't touch my crew. You can't touch them. Even with Dusty, throw Dusty in too. You can't touch my crew here. And Gary Ward told me, I'll never forget, he said, the Yankees want to win with a certain type of player. And it seems that what we're seeing here, and you brought up in boxing, there are certain fractions, there are certain powers, there are certain things that are always going to be. And baseball is American. It just seems to be, lady, that's the American way. I mean, I remember what Rafael Santana told me. And I said, where was it more enjoyable for you to play, in the American League or the National League? He said, playing for the Yankees, you always felt there was a microphone behind the wall. It wasn't enjoyable. And it's amazing because it was the National League that first realized that the African-American player could be the superstar. They had the quota system, which kept Clemente off the Dodgers. In fact, it kept Murray Wills from being on the Dodgers because of the fact that Pee Wee Reese was there. It kept Koufax on the bench as a bonus baby so he couldn't develop earlier, which didn't hurt him too much, but it did hurt him somewhat. But I know you got to go, and as often as things change, they remain the same. And we always want you to make any of your commentary interjections. But you're basically saying what has been said. Has there been a commissioner in your mind? Because I remember the thing that Bowie Kuhn did. I mean, how do you ban Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle from baseball? And Faith Vincent came in. I think he came at the right time. But you're saying that without question, the commissioner of baseball is the puppet, is the mouthpiece. And Dusty said, you pay him right. he really is not his own man, Nate.
He's not, but yeah, and I would say that's his choice. You know, he makes that choice. If he wanted to exert himself, you know, if he wanted to exert himself, he could. You know, just a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people that have positions and have bosses, you know, and feel like they don't have the power, but still find their space to, you know, find their own power within that position. You know, but I think in those positions, a commissioner can exert him or herself, you know. Most of, you know, these are men normally, you know, that's a whole other thing. But that's his choice. I mean, I feel it's always somebody's choice.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Will we, is there a possibility now with female presidents, and a lot of people thought Hillary Clinton was going to be the first, is there a possibility? Ernie Banks once told me, Lady A, Dusty, I know you're sitting, are you sitting down, Dusty? Ernie Banks once told me, Mel Cosell, Nate, how Ernie Banks once told me the first African-American to win the MVP back-to-back, the only shortstop to win it back-to-back, the most home runs hit one by in a year by a shortstop, well, it surpassed by he once told me that he felt that a female manager could relate better to players than a male manager. Nate, is there a possibility down the line that we could have a female baseball commissioner?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't bet money that I have on it, but anything's possible.
Take Dusty's money. Bet it. Take Dusty's
money. Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, then, yeah.
Hey,
I'll
that could happen in the future, but right now, I'm sorry, then. Right now, there's still too much of an old boy network going on for that, Doc. But way, way in the future, I think that could happen. Way in the future.
Not in my lifetime.
Really?
Not in my lifetime. I can guarantee you. Not in my lifetime. If you take this old homeboys network, it is what it is. The old homeboys network.
Dusty, you telling me that we can have a black president but not a female baseball commissioner, Dusty?
Guaranteed. Not in my lifetime. I'm telling you. Not a football commissioner.
Not in Dusty's lifetime. I believe that myself.
Really?
Exactly.
Nate, you too?
Well, I don't believe it will happen soon. Is anything possible? I never want to say something's not possible. You know.
Uh-huh.
But will it happen? I'll put Destiny's money on it, but not mine. Sorry, Destiny.
If you just tuned in, this is Sports in Depth. We're here every Sunday, 9 to 11. I'm a little prejudiced. Yeah, I'm a little something. You can't get it any better than this. Destino Baby Lewis, Harold Weston Jr., Nate Berger, Lady A, Mel Cosell, C Wings, The Hoopster. This.
Doc.
Yeah.
I just want to ask Nate one question.
Yeah.
Didn't Cincinnati Reds have a female owner at one time?
Oh, yeah, Mark Sharp.
Oh, okay. So I mean.
The Mets had a Joan Payson. Dusty,
you know what? Forget the convention. It's off now. Dusty, you hit a point that it was Jane Payson who brought Willie. She was an old Giant fan. She loved Willie Mays. You're right.
Exactly.
She was the one that Stoneham said, you know, Willie, you know, I'm gonna send you to New York because she's gonna be able to take. You're right. But you know what? It's amazing how remote we think about that. But both these ladies, I think her dad owned. Didn't her dad own the team or something like that?
It was her dad that she inherited. What about the lady who was a football owner? I forget her name.
Rosenblum. Her husband died.
The idea is that these are owners. You're not talking about managers. You're not talking about coaches. You're not talking about batting coach or pitching coach or nothing. It's not going to happen. At least not in my lifetime. I'm telling you. And not football coaches or basketball coach. You have the WNBA. That's why it's still segregated, because you have the WNBA. Now, when are you going to get a female professional franchise in baseball? Nunca. Never. You're not going to get that. When are you going to get a female franchise? A franchise of football. You know, there is
a football team of ladies, I think, Playboy bunnies. Did you see that thing on TV? They actually play football.
Oh, yeah, the lingerie
league. But that thing is never going to be the NFL. That's going to be the laughing stock.
Hey, they can score on me, the ladies. I'll cover them one-on-one. I got no problem with that.
I'll
handle
the quarterback.
Hey, Dusty, in this case, I'm defense, baby.
Hey, Dusty. I'd be remiss if I didn't remind us all in our entire panel that there was one stroke of lightning happening on the woman's side once when I believe for all of one game we actually had a woman umpire in the majors.
I didn't hear that for all of one game.
Yeah.
One
game,
one time.
Referee in the NBA.
Yes. Oh, who's up? Real quickly.
Yo.
Nate, do you have to go or are you going to stay with us? You got to run?
Oh, yeah. I've got to go. I just wanted to say about Marge Schott. I mean, she got ran out of town because, I mean, there was a Sports Illustrated piece on her. She said, I mean, you know, she was using the N-word and, you know, all this other type of, you know, inappropriate stuff. So I've got to go, but I'll see all you guys next week. And
all right, Nate,
and
take care.
Good
thanks.
Take care.
Right, our baseball guy.
Okay.
Nate, thanks
hoopsta.
Up, baby.
Hoopsta.
Okay.
Hoopsta.
Yeah.
You there?
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm here. Right.
Oh, hoopsta. How you like my North Carolina Tar Heels?
Hey, you know what? Hey, Hoopsta,
hey,
she's calling that yang yang now.
But when
a few weeks ago, when Rivers hit that three, you was talking about how good he was.
He is good.
Let me
just tell you guys one thing, just so the panel knows this. Mm-hmm. When it comes to college basketball, you would probably turn around and say I'm a psycho because I love two teams that are rivals.
You
two teams
psycho,
that are rivals, the Tar Heels and the Duke Blue Devils are my favorite
teams.
Hey,
Lady A, you know what was stunning? That this year, Boeheim, for the first time ever,
30 wins.
Has a 30 wins, but you know what? But Calipari is the only coach in the history of collegiate to have five straight 30 wins in a row.
Crazy.
Hey, how good of a coach is Calipari?
Yeah, he don't impress me. He can't do it in the NBA. He can't do it in college. Man, he don't impress me.
Now, but you know what? Now it's a funny thing because. Was Larry Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Rainbow Solo Channel Sports Network the show? It is a Sunday. Nate has left us. The crew is all here. It's a Sunday night. You're at the right place. Hoopsta. Now, Larry Brown was one of his only coach to win an NCAA championship and an NBA championship.
He can coach.
What was it about Larry Brown that made him such a good coach, Hoopsta?
Allen Iverson. Now let me stop.
Period. That's one of the reasons.
Listen. If he went to the championship and the Sixers made it to the championship that year, and he was able to turn Allen Iverson around, man, I'll tell you, man, that guy is definitely a good coach.
They won the first game. They won the first game. But the only thing about Larry, though, the only thing about Larry is that Larry was the kind of coach, and once again, Larry's a friend of mine, you know, we're buddies, but it seems that Larry, they said Larry's the kind of guy that he was. He never had nothing to do with losing. You know, if we won the game, you know, Dusty pulled down 13 rebounds. Howard scored 24 points. Hoopsa did a great job on George. But if they lost the game, I think, Hoopsa, in my heart, that Larry Brown is a better coach than Phil Jackson.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Now, why has it taken Boeheim 30? This long to win 30 wins is Calipari, who you said is not in the same league as the coach, he's done it 5 years in a row. Is it him being in the right place at the right time, or what is it?
Period. Yes, he had the players around him. That's why.
Okay.
He had to build a team like Boeheim and him did. And plus, he got to recruit good, too. Boeheim did a good job recruiting also.
Carmelo Anthony.
He was mostly recruiting.
I want to know one thing. Why are we talking about those guys? Why are we not talking about the Knicks, how they blew the game that they should have won?
Oh, man.
And they
blew
the coach.
Harold, that was coming.
Why?
Harold, that was coming.
About?
Hey, Harold, stick the box, and that was coming?
I'm in all sports. But I'm just saying,
Harold,
Knicks and how the coach blew the game with 18 seconds left, with them ahead by 3 points, and no way in the world they should have lost.
Harold, you would know you, and because you were such a part. I mean, you were like a Garden fighter. I mean, but did you get a chance to meet some of the old great Knick players like Bradley, the Busher, Frazier?
I knew Earl Pearl were good friends and everything. I knew all them guys. I met Walt Frazier and all that. Yeah.
Here's
a perfect example.
If 18 seconds left in the game, and I'm ahead by 3 points, and I know that the other team has got some good outside shooters for a 3-point range, right? Wouldn't I try to do something like foul him, let them go to the line, and maybe try to hit the two? Then I get the ball. We only got 18 seconds left on the clock. Now, if I foul him, he goes to the foul line. He hits his two. I'm ahead by one, right? Now, we hit the ball. Now, if they foul me in the same situation, then we're going back. But seconds are getting left off the clock. That's what I'm saying, okay? My point is, you let this game get to the point where you're letting they're a good outside shooting team, and you let the guy score and then go to five.
Harold, not only that, they have the greatest three-point shooter in the history of the game.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I heard you, Harold.
The Knicks, that coach can't coach for the Knicks. Simple as that. And he don't know what kind of, he don't know the chemistry of that team.
Lynn saved his job. Lynn saved his job. He's doing all the things that Isaiah Thomas did, but you never hear about it. And you heard
right.
Hoopster, what happened?
Howell's right. They had nobody to guard Pierce. That's what happened. And Howell's right. They should have made a foul and put him on the line. Howell's right. I agree with Howell, what he's saying.
Somebody had brought a good point up to me, and I just want to inject this into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody had brought a good point to
that
me. I had me kind of like, well,
that
no, and here's another thing. I don't know if you guys, how does a kid who all of a sudden comes out of nowhere, okay, this guy comes out of nowhere, Lynn, because that's what they're basically, so he came out of nowhere. Hold up, guys. How does that happen and you're a professional basketball coach for an NBA team? Overnight. It happens overnight.
Kobe Bryant said what you're saying. And ladies and gentlemen, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Depth is the show. Doc Stanley Sports, that we're here 9 to 11 on Sundays. I ask you, if you want to learn, if you want to know the inside scoop, if you want to enhance whatever education you're about, be here. Lady A, you're saying with Kobe
Bryant. I didn't finish asking completely what I wanted to say. What I wanted to say was...
Hold on, you're going to finish. Kobe Bryant said what you said. Kobe Bryant said a player just doesn't come out of nowhere.
But what
A,
I'm saying is that that reinforces Harold's statement, which is that... What kind of professional basketball coach are you to coach a professional team in the NBA, and you're telling me this guy came out of nowhere? That guy should be fired.
He was on it. You saw him every day in practice. Every day in practice.
It's ridiculous.
Did it shock you guys that two other coaches, Golden State, passed on them? And who was the other team? Golden State?
Houston
passed on them. Kevin McHale.
Hey, you know what? How much of this could have been because he was Oriental, Hoopster?
Doesn't make no difference.
I don't think it had any difference to that.
Okay, good.
That's like throwing an Asian guy in the ring. Like, the guy could fight, he could fight. Right, Harold? You said it yourself.
Right.
Purple, green, yellow. Can a guy fight?
Harold said, I don't... Harold, hey, if he's blue, black, Mel, I'll be with you in a minute. Black, green, or yellow. Ladies and gentlemen, real quickly, we got to take a quick break. We'll go into Doc Stanley, Trusted God Sports App Hall of Fame. A couple of things I wanted to let you know. DocStanleySports.com is where
hey,
I want
Doc,
you to I'm hit.
Doc, I have to say also.
Go ahead. Go ahead, closer.
And, you know, the NBA's also promoting Latin American Day for the NBA. They got the
when?
NBA
what day is that? What day is that?
It's right now, today.
Today's Latin America Day?
Latin America Day for the NBA celebrating a Latin America Day.
No wonder Dusty was so testy and feisty today. Dusty, play some Latin music for us in the background. Come on, baby. But it's we want to you know it's real quickly. I want to touch on a couple of things. I told you about the boxing thing. I was going through some stuff because as I told you, it was amazing. PJ Albert, who was the photographer for me at Black Sports World today, he took a picture here and I looked at it. And a picture of Brett Favre and Rodgers as they warmed up before a game at the at then Giants Stadium. And looking at some other stuff, as you know, DocStanleySports.com at the Trust in God Sports and Depth Hall of Fame. Looking at it, I put a little collage together. And, you know, that's it. I'm looking at George Allen, the future is now, is on the collage. Jerry Vale, the great singer. Harold, our good friend, Smoking Joe Frazier, and I got a ringside ticket stub from the Holmes Ali fight, which was October 2nd, 1980. Clyde Frazier autographed Judd Hirsch from Taxi, Steve Garvey, who thinks he'd be in the Hall of Fame. Bill Cosby is here, along with Jerry Vale and Dustin Hoffman, who was, and Brenda Sykes, and Dustin Hopper, who was a big, big Knick fan at courtside. Bill Parcells. I don't understand how Bill Parcells is not in the Hall of Fame, but he's in the Doc Stanley Sports Hall of their Fame. And what I did, I so often try to put something together that's quite unique. And I saw somebody had discarded one of these bags that had a hoard of baseballs on it. So what I did, I took the baseball, and I tried to get as many guys from that team. Now, some of the names that I got here, Gene Kleins, who was part of that 1971 all-black lineup. Orlando Lopeta, the first man ever to win the MVP and the Rookie of the Year unanimously. Joe Morgan, the only second baseman to ever win the MVP back-to-back. Rusty Staub, only him and Ty Cobb hit home runs at over the age of 40. Joe Carter, the only man to hit a game-winning home run in the World Series with his team behind. Benito Santiago, one of the few men to win the Rookie of the Year unanimously. George Brett, the only man to win a batting title in three different decades.
Don't forget your boy Ozzie Smith, too, Doc. Your boy Ozzie Smith,
No, Ozzie's here, along with, a name. Dusty, here's a name for the past. Dusty, you probably played with him. But, Dusty, remember Ron Paranowski?
Ron Paranowski?
Yeah. Remember the relief pitcher for the Dodgers?
Yeah.
I knew you. Okay, he's here. Barry Bonds. Don Sutton, the only guy to win 300 games and never have a 20-win season. And
no,
Don Baylor.
He was low.
Don Baylor, the only DH to win the MVP. It's a unique piece here. It's in the Doc Stanley Trust and God Sports Up Hall of Fame. And I've got a sun visor. I remember I was talking to Rooney about it earlier. At that time, I was dating a young lady, and I had borrowed a car, and Ricky needed a ride. So Ricky Henderson, the greatest leadoff hitter in the history of baseball, one of only 28 guys with 3,000 base hits. I got Ricky I said, Ricky, would you sign this for my lady? So he autographed the sun visor for me. And Marion Boykin, I've so often talked about Marion Boykin, and as I say, talking with my crew here, the great line by Walt Whitman, I no doubt deserve my enemies, but I doubt if I deserve my friends. And I needed a letter from somebody to help me get an apartment, and I asked Marion Boykin to do it, and I remember framing it. It's June 3rd, 2004, and it just shows how blessed nobody like me to be in the company of this vast audience, Sports and Deaf Nation, and this great panel. You know, these people always act like they're doing me a favor by being here, but you are, because I'm the one doing it. I can't thank you really enough. But Marion wrote, to whom it may concern, I have known Dr. Melvin Stanley for nearly 20 years now, and all the time I've witnessed him to be a man of good character and action. I have found him to be most dependable and regular in good deeds to his fellow man. As a former New York City police officer, Mr. Stanley has served New York City public and helped to keep it safe through many trying times. He has also been a tremendous mentor to children in schools as he took part in crime prevention and education programs. Also, for many years, he has been a notable sports writer and analyst in New York City, covering everything from New York Knicks basketball to pro football, hockey, and boxing. He was well respected for his work and encyclopedia-like knowledge of sports history. He also is the most dedicated father and continues to help others in any way that he can. So without the slightest reservation, I recommend Dr. Melvin Stanley for an apartment, a job, or for anything. You just get touched, you know, man. You're working for you recommended me for anything. And it's you people who have made me, you know. And I think it proves that I'm a pretty hell of a scout to put together this lineup. And I've told you the walks of life where these people come from. You know, I've got a fire lieutenant here who was a former boxing champion. You're always a champion. Dusty's a champion. Harold, the only African-American matchmaker in the history of Madison Square Garden. Rooney, cup of coffee or not, baby. Cup of coffee, WWF star. The Lady A. Hey, A is the first lady in the alphabet. No more need to be said. The hoopster who hung with the best that ever played the game, Fly Williams. World Be Free. Willie Randolph, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, names that Harold know, Riddick Big Daddy Bro, Mark Breland, Floyd Patterson, Mike Gerald Tyson.
Otis Wilson.
Otis Wilson here. On
Lloyd Daniels.
Bear thing. That's right, Lloyd. Hey, Popeye. No, Sweet Pea.
Sweet Pea. What the
my
high
man.
School.
Sweet Pea. he was Jeff, too? Yep.
Yes, he did. Yep.
Really?
Yes, he did. Well,
they say, what a great player he was, and
so
looking at the boxing thing. And one of the things I was surprised about the boxing thing, because I have Harold on everything, but Floyd Patterson here.
Oh, Doc, before I forget, I'm sorry, I wanted to say this to Hoopster. Remember we were talking about it for Brooklyn? Remember we were talking about that the other day? About the whole event in Brooklyn? Oh, Hoopster, I don't know if you know, Zab is fighting at the Aviator Gym on the 24th. You know that, right?
The 24th?
Zab Judah, yeah.
Harold,
okay. And Pavel Wallach.
Yeah, well, that's our guy, Wallach. But Harold,
how good
in your estimation is Zab Judah, Harold?
I mean, he's okay for this, Harold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's about
but,
it. I mean, you can't. Well,
Zab Judah's done now. Zab is done now. Zab was the type of guy. And Harold and Dusty can comment on it. That it depends on what Zab showed up. The guy could look like a world beater one night, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 months later, you see the guy, and you're like, well, is this the same damn Zab? Is this the same Zab?
But you know what, Rooney, you make a great point. But Dusty, you know, Dusty, I can't understand it. How can you come in the ring ready to take off a head, and then come in another night? And your head can be taken off. There's something wrong with discipline. There's something wrong with your corner, Dusty.
So the person himself, I believe,
you know,
is the person himself.
You know what the problem is, and this is what the real problem is. When you're fighting a lot of bums, okay, and you're so used to that, then you think that you're good at what you really are. And what happens to the person is that when you finally start getting into that, you know, into that mode where you're fighting somebody that can fight a little bit, now you really think that you're so good that you still can beat them, but you're still messing around out there, and you get caught up, and you get stretched out. And that's what happened with it.
Harold, when did you see? And I remember Subia Pedrosa, a pro in the mold of you and Dusty and Duran and Ray Scott. When did you see? Pedrosa talked about it. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Depth of the show. When did you see the infiltration of drugs in boxing?
I never saw it. I never, you know, not on the end of our, you know, the people that I was dealing with. We didn't believe in that stuff. Everything was
no, I know, but I mean, see, but you had heard about it. Pedrosa said that he had said that was the problem with boxing at the time. Guys were starting to deviate into that venue.
only time, the only thing that I guys just take drugs to make themselves better, because we didn't know nothing about that enhancing stuff. And the only time that we heard about it is when the Russians was using it in the Olympics and stuff
the
like
Olympics.
That.
Really?
We didn't know nothing about any kind of drug. Believe me, Mel, nobody even believed in anything like that. That's what I keep trying to tell you. If there was any drug that could make you a bad dude, everybody'd be taking it, okay? There was no drug out there to make you a bad dude.
Exactly.
You was what you were, okay? I don't care what they pumping you. You are, if you're a faggot, you're a punk fighter today, you're going to be a punk fighter tomorrow. And I don't care what drug they put in you.
And how to speak the truth, Doc, because all roids and HGH and all that stuff does is you have to have the talent to begin with, okay? I mean, if you can't hit a fastball, all the roids in the world are not going to help you hit a fastball,
Rooney,
okay?
Rooney, great point. We talked about this the other day, Rooney. So now it brings us to the point then, Dusty, I know you're going to come at me, so I'm ready. I'm ducking it ready. Then how much can we take away from the so-called steroid era when you have to have ability to play the game anyway? Mark McGwire hit 49 home runs as a rookie.
You have to understand something, Doc. You said that, Harold, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And this is where I stand on what he says. He says, you are an athlete. You train. You prepare yourself for your career.
Mm-hmm.
But the body was not made to be stretched and punished and bent and twisted.
Wow.
It takes a lot out of you. So then these guys begin to imbibe or transmit this so-called new enhancement that's going to make you a better ball player and maintain that $10-15 million package that you're getting.
Okay, Dusty, and Bert Flowers said this, so late Bert agrees with Bert too. Can we say this, Dusty, then, and maybe, you know, if everybody is doing it, Dusty, then who's cheating?
If everybody's doing it, they were all cheating because it wasn't an officially approved thing
to do.
It was with a wink of an eye. I said, oh, you know, you shouldn't do that. That's wrong. But blink, 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 wink, wink. If they did it, they do it. You see what I'm saying to you?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's going. It was not permitted / winking of an eye community of guys doing this to get better. That's what it is. It never entered boxing until you saw one or two guys. The first guy that I know that was busted for HGH was Fernando Vargas when he fought
Fernando Vargas. That's right.
He fought Oscar, almost killed Oscar for 8 rounds. I thought he was going to knock out Oscar. But I don't know what happened with his enhancement because he got tired and Oscar knocked him out. I think it was in the 9th round.
Mm-hmm.
When he went to the post-fight exam, bingo, he tested positive. He apologized and he paid a $100,000 fine, and I think he was suspended for 8 months. That's it. Another situation was when James Lighthouse Tony tore his Achilles heel. Emergency surgery. He was treated, operated on. 6 weeks later, he went back into training under constant training and reevaluation by his surgeon, who gave him some medication to. He continued to rehab. He beats the crap out of Evander Holyfield, and wins. Right? What happens? He has the post-fight test. And he tested positive. He said, wait a minute, I'm not a steroid junkie. I didn't take any steroids. I'm taking prescribed medication by my doctor. He had a hearing. He appealed. He had a hearing. The doctor came in, showed the charts, the MRI, the X-ray, everything he did. And, yes, I prescribed this medication for him to continue healing because he needs to continue healing. What did the commission say? The commission says, that's right, Dr. James Tony, you're right. You didn't take any illegal drugs, but
you still lose the crown because we're not sure that the medication you took did not enhance you to be Holyfield.
Yeah, make the same argument too with Mosley. Mosley got caught too, so it's the same difference.
Yeah, Mosley got caught.
Mosley was a different story.
Hey, what's that line? You can't win for lose. Dusty, what did they tell him, Dusty?
It says we're not too sure that in taking this medication, it did not help you. Hold on a second.
And just to counter what Dusty's saying, to piggyback on that too, I mean, let's not forget there have been athletes that have been banned for less than that. I mean, look at it in track and field. You got people that have been they have such a stringent list with prescription medications that even like cough medicine and medicines like that are banned from. They can't even take that.
You know what? You know, Lady A. Even in the transit department, there were people who were taking medicine, Robitussin, and it would show up in their system as a drug, and they said, "Hey, all I'm taking is cough medicine. I'm not a druggie."
Which is an over-the-counter thing and could easily be. I mean, if they pull up the what's in a medicine like that, you know, you can articulate the fact that it's going to show certain things, and then eventually they're going to have to waive you. But the reality is just you have had people that have lost, you know, for a lot less than that.
Let me give you a little example.
Good.
There was, unfortunately, a raid in a firehouse that was suspected of drugs. Sure enough, they called the hoi polloi 9 to 5, a drug dealer who was in the fire department, and this, that, and the other. From then on, they ordered, to save face, random drug testing of all firehouses.
You said a drug dealer in the firehouse?
Yeah. They caught the dude. They busted him. Now, what they did was, to save face, every firehouse in the city, in the five boroughs, random drug testing. Marshals will come in. Okay, you, go to the medical office right now.
Same police department.
Yeah. And there were five guys that went to the medical office. And this is the tragedy here. If five guys went to the medical office and three tested positive, suspended 30 days without pay, pending trial, and pending termination. Now, wait a minute. I got injured. The medical doctor from the fire department gave me some medication. I tested positive. So what now? At that time, I was a union delegate. I said, whoa, you're not going to do that to my guys. What you're going to do, I told my guys, from now on, if they're random drug testing, if you're taking medication, legitimate medication prescribed by the department doctor, you take your prescription, get the doctor's name, you take everything down to the drug testing. Sure enough, they tested positive, they compared it to the medication. Okay, that's what they did. They panicked because they wanted to clean up the firehouse. Now, the thing with James Toney is exactly what I was trying to tell you. He was taking legitimate medication, and he said, well, we're not too sure whether that medication enhances you to be healthy. The bottom line on all that is, Doc, is steroids and HGH,
human growth hormones, doesn't give you the talent, okay? Let me just finish up the story here.
Right, but let me finish up this story here.
Right.
Floyd Mayweather has bad arms, bad hands.
He faced surgery. He takes keratin.
When he fought Jose Luis Castillo, he was like begging, crying, because in fact that fight I thought he lost. He was going to face surgery after that fight. What happened, they found some medication, I think it was lidocaine it was called, that he could inject and take his hands and put his hands there. He will not feel any pain. But on the examination, it tested positive. So this is why, who's calling the kettle black when he says Pacquiao was taking drugs? He himself was taking lidocaine, but it was an approved medication and he was allowed to use it. So this is what I'm trying to tell you. They have to draw the line whether you're taking medication, any medication that we got tested positive. That's why they tell you, don't drive and don't do this and don't do that because you might get sleepy.
Right.
And Doc, it's up to the individual athlete. It's up to the individual athlete to know what's in the medication that, you know, he is taking.
Well, of course.
I mean, like Dusty said, certain things that you'll take, even certain things that are over the counter, you'll take and you'll test positive because of it. It's up to the individual athlete to know what it is, you know, that they're taking, what they're doing with their body.
Well,
two things here, Dusty. I want you to tell the world right now that you never had a drug problem. Tell the world.
I never had a drug problem until last week when I talked to you. You drove me to drugs called Hennessy. So
Doc Stanley is bored to death on the Blake Radio Network. This is the best 2 hours of sports in the world right here. And we want to, you know, now you can get us on your cell phones. You get Sports in Depth live on archive shows. You can hear Harold.
Make sure you do.
Justino Baby Lewis.
Make sure you
Mel
do.
Mel Kelsey.
I have to ask something before we leave here, otherwise I'd be remiss.
Oh, no, we got to talk about Woody.
I have to say something about sports entertainment just quickly, and you'll know the reason why when I finish.
Yeah.
They have a WrestleMania, which is the biggest wrestling show of the year for the WWE, formerly the WWF, World Wrestling Entertainment. And the reason that I mention it is not to promote it or hype it. However, the two main combatants, that takes place April 1st, I believe, in Florida. The reason that I mention that is, the main event features John Cena and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And the only reason that I mention that main event is because there is actually real heat going on between them backstage, real bona fide, real heat.
Now explain to us what you mean by real heat.
Oh, well, that means, Doctor, this isn't an act. It's not part of the show itself that there's a bona fide dislike between the two guys who are going to be working with each other come April 1st, just bona fide, they call that backstage drama heat. And in this particular instance, there's actually real disagreement and heat between the two current guys, John Cena and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. There's respect but dislike between the two because they both have egos the size of Central Park or larger. So, both of them would like to be the man. And even though there is respect between the two, and I'm not hyping this or promoting it, but there's real backstage heat between the two, and everybody knows it. So I'm just anxious to see how those two work together.
Rooney, there's
a bona fide dislike between the two.
Okay, why is there a problem, and what caused the problem?
The problem is, Doc, that both of them would like to be the man. Cena always says that, hey, Rock made his name in wrestling, he gives nothing back to the fans. He says that, hey, he comes here every 6 months when he's bored, not making a movie, and everybody, Rock wants everybody to be at his feet because he cares to grace us with his presence.
That is funny.
However, The Rock also says, well, you know something, Cena's just a big phony. How dare he tell me what to do after I've worked hard to make it in this business, and so I'm a movie star now. I'm good at it. How dare he dictate to me how often I should appear as a wrestler? So there's a bona fide heat between those two,
but Rooney,
to see how they look working together.
Rooney, but Rock could talk all he wants. His family has been part of wrestling forever. He's been part of wrestling forever. He grew up in wrestling. So
that's
he
right.
can talk
Lady
all he wants. His father, Rocky Johnson, was a champion. I mean, come on, he could talk all he wants.
And his grandfather, Peter Mike V, and all
come
of this.
Come on, get out of here.
But the fact remains that Cena has an attitude with Rock because he feels as though he's, which he is, using wrestling as a part-time thing, whereas, you know, he's there every week taking what we call the bumps, you know, and the falls and the this and that. So this is, as I said, there's bona fide a heat between the two, and I'm anxious to see how stiff, meaning how, you know, tough their actual match is. There's a tendency in wrestling that when two guys really don't care for each other, they work, as we say, very stiff with each other during the course of the match, and I'm actually anxious to see if that takes place.
Well, not jealousy. That's the man is popular. Rock, the Rock, or Dwayne Johnson now, because he's in the movie star, so he doesn't want me to call the Rock. But that's a man is able to balance out two careers. The other guy is a one career dude. I mean, that's
hey,
that's
I'm gonna say this. I will call Dwayne Johnson the Rock as long as I want, and my name is Destinio Baby Lois Jr.
That's right.
If you want my phone number, I'll give it to you.
But I mean, you know, traditionally, Doc,
and panel, the
really?
Promoters just love putting guys together who have a bona fide dislike for each other in real life, because the matches are so much better.
Rooney, did you ever have a match where you had a guy that you just didn't like?
No, Doc, nobody has really despised or disdained. The thing about wrestling that you have to understand is, Doc, is you have each other's lives in your hand, you know, an awful lot. As a matter of fact, when I first got into wrestling, that was like one of my biggest trepidations, guys having my life in their hands and vice versa. You know, some of those moves are like really, really brutal. And if the timing is not just right, you can get really, really hurt badly. So that's the only thing. But there are a lot of times, Doc, when you know, guys really don't care for each other, and it comes out in their matches. Believe me, if you know what they're doing, what's really going on, you can see it in their matches. Guys that really don't like each other.
Doc Stanley, Sports Network, on the Blaze Radio Network, Rainbow, Sports Network, the show. And go ahead, Winnie. I'm sorry.
No, Doc, I was going to say, you know, the greatest explanation of what pro wrestling is really about that I've ever heard comes from a former star named Diamond Dallas Page. He says, you know, people ask me if it's real or fake all the time. He said, I answer them like this. He said, say I'm working with a guy that I don't particularly care for, and say he doesn't particularly care for me either. So we start the match, and he starts the match with a chop that I think is a little harsh. So I come back a little harder with mine. Yeah, well, things get real, real, real fast. And boy, is that the truth.
Things get really real fast.
Things get real, real, real fast. So
ladies and gentlemen,
I'm not telling you what I heard. I'm not telling you what I imagine. I'm telling you what I know. Guys start laying those shots in there, and very little pulling done. Okay,
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports in Depth for the show. This is Real Sports. They're here. Lady A, Harold Weston Jr., Destinio, Dusty, Baby Lewis, Mel, Luda Rooney, Coco, Sell, C-Wings, Nate, Right Field Burger, and the Hoopster. Hoopster, you thought the Knicks had a good shot, then you thought, no. Can they make the playoffs?
Will they make
the playoffs? Can they win the championship?
No, they'll make the playoffs, but they're gonna get some teams some problems because they got a deep bench. I told you, gotta do like Howell said, they gotta know how to coach them. That's it.
Okay. Yeah. Now here's the problem. Now today, this day, this guy showed, and I always said this, you know, managers, coaches, they don't win games, they lose them. He lost his game today.
Yes, he
okay.
did.
Okay, and now here's a guy who's become a big star who was sitting on his bench. He saved his job.
Yes, he did.
Okay, is he going to be around next year? Is he going to make? Do you see a new coach next year for the Knicks?
We'll see how far they go.
Doc Rivers.
Yeah, we'll see how far they go. So we'll see. It's up to the Dolan family. We'll see what they say.
Yeah.
We'll see how the season is, and we'll go from there. But so far, his job is saved because also a lot of people don't know. Carmelo Anthony told Matt Tony to give that boy a chance.
Yeah. That's the
And ever since then, what happened?
Yeah.
Now he's the number one shirt seller and jersey seller.
Yeah.
And then he's the number one jersey seller in the NBA now, Doc.
Yeah.
Doc Stanley, Sports Jeff on the Blake, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Jeff of the show. Three thoughts. We got to give it to you. Mic on, lights off. Live your life today as if it's done before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for the service of others? Is when you pay for your space on earth. And with that, Now, your heart should close out. We'll be back in a minute. Doc Stanley, Sports Up with a Break! We're the network main host for the channel. Sports Up. Hey, Larry, you can come on and go now if you want to. With you.
Hey, this concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Mic on, lights off. Another Christian music show. Pound that I don't want to go just yet. Doc Stanley, Sports Up on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Up for the show. So we'll kick it a little longer. The Hoopsa, talking about, will D'Antoni still be here? TKO. She's Howard Weston Jr., just always an enlightenment. And D'Antonio, Zabie Leah Zoas, Murdy K Sound. He's here with us. The First Lady, the Sports Lady A. And later, that's it, but the Hoopsa is here. So we're going to pursue it a little longer. We're going to talk maybe another 15, 20 minutes about
everything. And Doc Lovesley Jr., I just want to say one more quick thing before you go on with the panel.
No, Ronnie, we're back. We're not going. We're back here now. We're back.
I want to be sure to say, Doc, that everything that I said, keep in mind, of course, is in the confines of entertainment. Obviously, I don't want the fans to lose that fact. We're still talking about sports entertainment. But I'm just trying to say, when I was relaying the other things that I said, I meant that in the fact that, you know, guys tend to work very, very closely with each other, you know, when they're bona fide dislike.
Rooney, all I like is things get real. Real. Hey, don't nobody move. Hey, Rooney,
guys start taking cheap shots, Doc. Guys start taking
Rooney, just give me a line. Things get what real? Rooney, one more time.
Dallas said, and Doc, I found out it's damn true, that, hey, when guys really have a dislike for each other within the confines of entertainment or not, things, shots get real, real, real fast.
We'll be right back.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports in Depth, the show. A couple of things. BlakeRadio.com, Rainbow Soul. Hit that. Want to make a donation? Hey, we'd love to have it. DocStanleySports.com, that's the site. My sports memorabilia, Trust in God, Sports in Depth Hall of Fame memorabilia collection. We read some things earlier. I talked about, I'm grabbing a hat here. Harold Weston's on his hat. Sugar Ray. So is Roberto Manuel Pedro Duran. Out in Vegas, the Tyson Biggs fight down in Atlantic City. The first autograph I see is Howard Weston Jr. And then we look along some autographs on the cap. We also have Billy, the late Billy Costello. Wow, lightweight champion. And my good buddy, Hot Pepper Brent. Good little fighter. Back in the day,
hey,
Ronaldo.
Nice. From Zetside Boxing Association, Hot Pepper. 4-1-12, and I think he went 11 rounds against the champion before just running out of gas. Henry Hot Pepper Brett. I remember that when I used to box down by this time.
I remember I was a keynote speaker at his organization, and the guy who is a mentor and a father figure, kind of like a father figure and brother to Howard Weston Jr. And Howard, you know, all you know is this. Howard Weston Jr. said that Emil Griffith could have beat Ray Robertson as a welterweight. He's here, my good buddy. And a longtime friend, another one who loved Demony so much. And I want to thank him. Ronaldo Snipes is on the cap, looking at another one. I looked at a baseball cap the other day. And you just don't realize, in the Doc Stanley Trust in God Sports Hall of Fame, and I looked at the cap, and I looked, and there's Gaylord Perry. Gaylord Perry was the first pitcher to win the Cy Young in both leagues. They tell the story of Gaylord taking batting practice, and manager Alvin Dock, the sports writers were teasing Alvin Dock about this young outfielder. And Alvin Dock said that Gaylord, man will land on the moon before Gaylord Perry hits a home run. Sure enough, on the day that Alan Shepard landed on the moon, that night, that evening, Gaylord Perry hit his first major league home run. Reginald Martinez Jackson, 3 pitches, 3 home runs. Leroy Knee, the greatest sports artist of the of ever, told the story of being on the field before that game, and Larry told Leroy, said Reggie told him, you know, Leroy, I got a feeling I'm gonna do something special tonight, and Leroy said, Reggie, you always say that. No, Reggie, you always say, I got a feeling I'm gonna do something special tonight. 3 pitches, 3 home runs. Charlie Howe was the last one, knuckleball pitcher. 3 pitches, 3 home runs. He's on that. Harmon Killebrew, reading the story about Killebrew, he was his first time up. He played for the Washington Senators, came to the plate. The catcher told him, kid, we're going to throw you a fastball. He hit it 445 feet. When he touched home plate, they said, the pitcher catcher told him, we'll never tell you what we're going to throw you again. Denny McClain, the last pitcher in the 20th century to win 30 games, 31 games for the Detroit Tigers in 1968. I believe that every game he pitched, the Tigers averaged 7 runs a game. Larry Doby, first African-American in the American League, first African-American to win a world championship, the first African-American to lead the league in home runs and RBIs. He did that twice, home run-wise. He's on the hat. Mark the Bird Fidrich, who had a fascinating career, and baseball was fascinated by him. Talk to the dirt, talk to the ball. Looney Bird. Yeah, Looney Bird.
Good Mark was so wild, Doc. He talked to telephone poles. Mark would talk to anything.
Hey, listen. As long as they would listen and not talk back, and one day was just, he couldn't talk to Dusty. Dusty was like, "Hey, I'm not gonna have that, man. Shut up."
Right. Your time is up.
Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Network, Rainbow Soul Channel. Boys have a show, another fit, good 50-20 gang. Let's kick it around. What's on your mind? What you got to say?
Okay, Doc, can I start it off? I want to open up a
good
channel.
Let me
say this. I got to go, fella. I can get up early in the morning. I got to meet
you. Oh, Harold, you're the main man. Oh, boy, that you got to go. Can you just give me 2 minutes?
Go ahead.
Give us 2 minutes, Harold. Go ahead, Dustin.
Well, I told you this afternoon that I was worried about the forensic and the pathology of what Floyd Mayweather's doing and the thing that comes out of his mouth. I wonder if he's in his right mind at times or the pressure of going to prison in June. Because he was introduced by Bernardo Osuna, the other ESPN, you know, and he says, the greatest fighter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Floyd Mayweather Jr. Said, don't you dare call me Jr. I'm not, the guy was embarrassed. Don't dare call me
really?
Jr. That's my father's guy. I'm not a junior, so don't ever say that to me again. Wow, I'm saying, my God. And then he starts ready. Oh, well, I know that Miguel Cotto took the fight because I know he's been studying my films and he copied a lot of stuff for me, and he's going to try to use that against me. And I know for a fight that I'm going to come up with a few wrinkles, and I come in with my A game, so he can't beat me no matter how much he copied everything for me. I said, wow, what's going on here? And now, with the thing that I tried to explain to you at the beginning of he's giving Pacquiao nothing, and you know, no pay per view, no nothing, and he's telling Pacquiao you're not the sharpest knife in the drawer. But yet, I wonder what his mentality is. I wonder what his mentality is when he talks this way.
It's the kettle calling the teapot black?
Yeah, the kettle calling, you know. And then he's going, I'm going to the commission to demand 8-ounce gloves because I had trouble with the 10 ounces. Is this man thinking? I come to the conclusion, Connell, you absorb what I'm saying and give me I personally feel that he's losing, you know, the pressure is getting to him. And number one, and I personally feel that I think he made a mistake not fighting Pacquiao, who I feel he can beat, and fighting a guy like Miguel Cotto, who Miguel Cotto turns around and says, look, I was nervous when I had to fight Margarito because I wasn't sure whether the man beat me dirty or the man beat me clean. But these are all interviews. I'm not making this up, man. And when after the first second round, I knew that the man had cheated. That's why I had no problem with him. And I kept bouncing him. I kept hurting him. And you know, and I beat him. I still hold back for that 10th round. But
after I beat Margarito, I have a new focus, knowing that I could beat anybody in the world. That's why I don't know who called who first, but Mikoto says that's why I called out Mayweather, because I knew
Dusty,
he had a
date. It's amazing, and I said this, and I really I wanted to stop this during the early part of this year, but I'm still agreeing with you, so I guess I got to go a little further. But you know, because he said that he said there were demons that were released. There was pressure that was taken. Beating Margarito, he said he was just reborn.
Right.
Free.
And he said something else, which is part of my column. He says,
"You was there.
I had the benefits of two worlds when I hooked up with Emmanuel Stewart and Pedro Garcia. They both elevated me to a high level of total confidence and total focus. And I know exactly, that's why, again, it's a mystery of who called who, but that's why I knew Mayweather had an open date and no opponent. That's why I grabbed it. And as I'm saying, Jesus, now with Mayweather's state of mind, having to face jail, I don't know what's going on. You know, I hope that he is, I hope for Mayweather's sake that he is sharp and know what he's, you know, he focused. But then again, I don't know.
Harold,
it's funny that Dusty should say that, because I'm having a very funny feeling that either Mayweather is going to lose soon or Pacquiao is going to lose soon, or one of them is going to be upset relatively soon. I'm just having a funny feeling.
What could be amazing is that both guys could upset, and we wound up with a Cotto Bradley fight. I don't think, you know, Mayweather, I see winning. I think the Bradley is suspect. But, Harold, before you go, some thoughts here, Harold.
My thoughts is, like I said, I like Cotto. I said it the other last week that I feel that Cotto's going to upset. I said if Cotto fights anyway like he fought Margarito, he's going to beat over here. Mayweather. Mayweather is not a three-minute fighter. Everybody think Mayweather can fight. He can't fight. He's not a three. He's able to pick his spots and fight guys that he knows that's going to sit there and hesitate, and he can pick them off like he wants to. But if my point is that he cannot fight a guy.
Harold, you made the point.
Active.
Roger,
so he's
Roger,
not going to win the fight.
So Roger is not that good of a trainer.
It's not about Roger
not being a good trainer. It's the fact that Mayweather is made for Roger. All he is a duplicate from his father and his uncle. That's all it is.
Exactly.
I said that last week. That's all he is.
Miguel Cotto said something thank God, Harold, that you said what you said. Miguel Cotto says, I come to fight 3 minutes of the round. I know that Mayweather throws his punches and spots and he wants to rest. And he wants to counterpunch me. That's not going to happen because I fight 3 out of the 3 minutes of the round.
Right.
How are you around that?
I told you that anybody that can dictate the pace can be that's what's so great about having pros like, you know, Dusty and Howard and, you know, the rest of our panel, Hoops 88, because I told you the other day, Doc, when we had this discussion, that anybody that can make this dude fight and not have him set his own pace and fight when he feels like he can beat him.
Emmanuel Stewart said when he fought, there was no way in the world Sugar Shane Mosley, who was done at the third round, should have went anything beyond that. Tommy Hearns, Tyra Weston, Ray Leonard, Duran, Milton McCoury, Donald Curry, they all would have took out Sugar Shane Mosley within the first 5 rounds. Am I right, Harold?
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys, like I said, Sugar Shane fights just like Mosley, look for their spot. And my point is that, you know, in our era, you had to fight. You know what I mean? And if you had a weakness, which these guys got weaknesses, they got a lot of weaknesses. The point is that they were never made it because one thing, like I said, he is only a duplicate from his uncle and
his
father.
Of his legacy.
Okay? Yeah. And they wasn't great. He's just in the right era at the right time where guys cannot even fight. But believe me, I give Cotto a big, big plus that he's going to upset this man. If his mindset is anything like he fought the last fight, and
Margarito.
If there was that Margarito, Believe me, he's going to beat the guy. He's going to beat
Harold,
the guy.
Harold, would having Emmanuel Stewart in his corner, would that be helpful to him in his fight? Or does it matter?
Oh, yeah. You know, with Emmanuel Stewart with Cotto?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because of the fact that because he knows the kid's got to fight three. The kid already saying he's got to fight 3 minutes around. When a fighter knows what he's got to
exactly.
do, he's going to prepare himself for what he's going to do. And
yeah,
Cotto,
yeah, he has
the one thing I got to say about my Latino brothers and everything else, when they're in front of that big fight and their people are watching, believe me, they're going to give it all. Even if in a losing aspect, but he's going to give it all. And
wow.
I believe he's going to win the fight. As simple as that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And he has a shadow.
One thing I got to say about my Latino brothers, they got a lot of pride. When they come in that ring, boy, ain't nothing but pride coming in there. And when they got their pride and they feel they can win the fight, you got a fight on your hand. And
Harold, who were your top three Latin fighters?
What you mean in that sense?
I mean the Latin fighters that you've seen in history. Who would be your top three or top four Latin fighters?
Oh, there was a lot. I mean, you know, it just goes back. I mean, basically. When you talk about Latino fighters, I mean, there's a lot of them. You got the Mexicans, you got the Dominicans, you got the Puerto Ricans.
Yeah,
you got a whole lot.
Give me some names. Napoli's, Duran, Benitez. Give me some names.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Napoli's was great, but there was a couple of little small guys that you guys ain't never heard of.
Go ahead.
I forget this kid. He was 100. You might know him. He was like 118 pounder, but he was back in the 1960s and stuff. He had like about.
Was that Ricardo Pajarito Moreno, the
kid from Mexico, the one that had all these gone knockouts.
Yeah, Ricardo Pajarito Moreno.
Yeah, him. But
I
there was
think
another
that's the guy
one. There was another kid. Man, there's a lot of guys, man, that could really fight, man.
How good was Vilmar Fernandez, Harold?
Oh, Vilmar Fernandez was okay, man. But he was, you know, these guys. You know, I'm talking about these guys can. When I'm talking about can fight, these guys can fight and punch. That's how good these guys was, man. These guys can fight and punch. I mean, they didn't knock you out. They're going to John Cho beat the dog out you boxing.
What about Salvador Sanchez? Sanchez
was great. He was a great champion, man. Featherweight and everything, man. I mean, he knew what to do when he had a fight that he knew he was in, and he knew how to adjust his boxing skills in the fight. He was a great fighter. What he had in his favor that I always had in my favor, he knew how to pick the pace up, and he had a way of his stamina being more stronger than everybody else. The other thing you got to understand, he knew how to handle 15 rounds. Everybody can't handle 15 rounds.
Why, Harold? That's a real long time to rumble.
Because, man, because after you hit that 10 rounds, your whole body completely goes out of you. You're just going on instinct from that point on.
Yeah.
You just got to be mentally strong to be your instincts taking over that you're going to sustain what you're getting ready to put out because then it goes into a different level. That's where, believe me, a lot of these guys would not be champion of the world or a lot of famous guys wouldn't be champion of the world if it wasn't for 15 rounds. Ray Leonard would have got his butt beat if by Tommy Hearns the first time if it wasn't for 15 rounds.
Really?
Yeah, he was winning the fight the first time.
No, you're right. No, no, no. I remember, but Tommy had it.
He didn't stop until the 14th. And he was head on points going into the fight.
Yeah, Tommy would. No questions about Tommy.
You know, like Hal said, Sanchez, don't forget to add in that same era, Sanchez, Gomez, and Lupe Pintor.
With
Fredo Gomez.
These guys were great, man. I mean, you're talking about...
Asuma Nelson. Ricardo Lopez.
Mayweather ain't got nothing on these guys. Believe me, man. These guys were so smooth. They were so much of a boxing skill. Man, it was just amazing. It was a beautiful thing to watch. That was the whole thing about it. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
And listen, Harold, we didn't even mention Too Sweet Doc Stanley.
Yeah, Canvas backstabby.
Yeah.
Don't get jealous, baby.
No, but the reality is that
that's where I put him, baby, on the camp.
There,
that's where I put him.
There are guys out there, man, who was a pleasure to watch and how they smoothly moved around and they could hit. All of a sudden, some speedball come out of nowhere, man, from their stands, and boom, they would knock you out and beat you, man. I mean, it was a pleasure to watch these guys, but we don't see that anymore. I mean, when you see a guy jabbing
my all-time favorite towel, Doc and crew, and some of like I said, the guys that I just mentioned, Cornelius Boza Edwards, Bobby
wow.
Chacon, Bazooka Lamone.
Rooney, back up. Dusty.
Yeah.
Harold, Cornelius Boza Edwards, outstanding fighter?
Yeah, he was a good fighter.
He was good, yeah.
He was a good one, great.
Cut a lot.
Okay, Dusty, Alexis
yeah.
Arguello.
Oh, he was great.
Alexis Arguello was good until he met Aaron Pryor.
He was great.
He was a great fighter. I mean, this guy was good because he was, you see, I think, if I remember correctly, when I saw you, the few times I saw you fight, Harold was a boxer puncher. Okay?
Yeah, great.
That is the most dangerous fighter in the ring, a boxer puncher. You see a guy jabbing and moving and mucho sweet stuff and all that, you figure, this guy's a powder puff. All of a sudden, wham, you get hit with something like a rock. They say, where the hell did that come from? And that's a beautiful pivot, straight to the money, and you say, my God, I picked the wrong dude.
I like that about you, Harold, too.
I boxed Arguello one time in the gym. And the thing was with me and him, I was just too heavy for him. But the
really?
Thing,
right.
Oh, yeah.
He was a lightweight.
He wasn't even a lightweight then. He was still fighting at 118. Because he was moving
out
there for the title and everything.
Yeah?
Hey, Doc, I got to ask Cal this question before it goes. I got to ask him this.
Hold on.
Aaron, let me say this right quick, Doc. Aaron Pryor used to always say that Ray ducking me, he's scared to fight me. Who wins that rumble, Harold? Aaron Pryor or Ray Leonard?
No, Ray was ducking Aaron Pryor because Aaron Pryor was that good.
Yeah, that's what he said. I knew to say
he was that
me,
good.
Won't fight me. Who would have won that rumble? I'm out.
Aaron Pryor. Aaron Pryor was crazy, man. I mean, he was nonstop. He wouldn't care who he fought. I mean, you just had a fight, and Ray never wanted to fight him because Ray knew this guy just threw too many punches, and the guy had and Aaron Pryor had a good chin. That's what everybody knows.
Harold, you had a press conference. Y'all had a press conference at the Garden, and I did a story, The Plight of Aaron Pryor, where Aaron couldn't get a fight. Nobody wanted to fight him, Harold.
At that time, nobody really wanted to fight him.
Aaron
Pryor was that, because he was a tough guy to fight. He had this weird style. He threw so many punches. You knew you was in a fight. You gotta understand, Mel. Guys like Aaron Pryor, myself, when you're not scared of nobody and you willing to go to my hometown and beat them up and everything, and they know that it's going to be a fight. I mean, it's going to be a fight. It ain't going to be, I'm gonna figure you out. No. Soon as the bell rings. You are fighting. Nobody likes fights like that. Believe me, nobody likes fights like that. Where you got to fight 3 minutes around, and as the fight goes on, the pace picks up. Who wants to have a kind of fight like that all the time? That will wear you out. And
a lot
of guys don't want to be in that kind of fight. Believe me, it's a mental situation that any fighter knows that the next opponent he's fighting, he knows he's got to fight 3 minutes. That's what made Joe Frazier so great, because he was going to be on those heavyweights. Heavyweights wasn't used to that kind of pace. Even Ali was shocked at the pace that Joe Frazier had, because Ali thought Joe was going to get tied in that fight and he was going to knock him out in the late round. But it didn't
happen
like that. Mm-hmm. The first fight, right, because of the fact that
Joe never got tied in no fight.
You got to understand what I'm telling you about men. I'm telling you about boxers, real fighters. Anybody knows that you got a reputation and you are fighting 3 minutes around, you in shape all the time, you are known to be kicking butt, and you know what you're doing. Nobody wants that kind of fight, man. Nobody wants that kind of fight. You just got to be insane. And the only reason why you get the fight is the money's right. That's the only reason. You know, but you don't want the fight. The fight is too tough.
Exactly.
And that's what it's all about, man. Aaron Pryor was that good. He was good.
He was going to fight you.
Here we go. Sports in depth. Here's a story now, Harold. I got it, baby. Weston wasted. Heading to Mets. Texas picking up Brown. Use it. Harold Weston Jr. started off like a bat out of hell against Wilfred Benitez in his title tip 2 weeks ago. It seems the Heat really beat Harold. Give Will Ferrell's father an assist, too. Harold's corner was situated in the sun. So continue the saga of the out of luck and tough luck of Harold Weston Jr., one of the classiest fighters in the world and one of the nicest. And you told the story, Harold, of the doctor told you afterwards that you and Wilfredo could have died out there.
Oh, yeah, he did. He said it was unbelievable how we fought underneath the heat that was out there. I mean, the temperature was like 115 in out there. And underneath the canvas, it was like you got another 20 more points. So basically you had 135 degrees of weather in Puerto Rico. And they were so slick that they made me go to the corner where the sun was going to be beating down. And they had him in the shade. So, you know, everything was set up for him and ready to fight. But, I did what I knew I could do. I thought I wanted to fight. It's just like Aaron and them told me. They said, unless you win that fight convincingly, you ain't going to get the decision.
Yeah, well, they told you to jump.
And the fight was close. So, I mean, it was the
same thing with Ray and Benitez, because they stopped that fight with 14 seconds left. I still haven't seen the scorecards of that fight. I mean, you talked about Aaron, because you had a press conference. I did a story. I'm looking at my sports and death file, the plight of Aaron Pryor. Aaron Pryor is a fighter who can't get fights. Now, that's like a fish that can't find water. It's not that Aaron Pryor can't fight, it may be that he fights too well. He's a boxer, puncher, and a great finisher, states Garden matchmaker Gil Clancy. In a three-year span as a pro, he has earned a grand total of $40,000. Some fighters spend more on expenses. Wilfredo Gomez has spent more on his cars. Pryor, a former four-time national champ, lost only 16 times out of 200 bouts as a pro. He has beaten one of the top-rated flyweights, an unbelievable 13 times. He beat Detroit hitman Tommy Hearns, too, before becoming a pro. I just want to fight, Pryor states. And I remember y'all had that, before you became matchmaker, they had a press conference for Pryor. So you're saying Pryor would have beat – what about Pryor against Tommy, Harold?
He would have, as you know, he beat him in the amateur, beat Tommy. But he would not have beaten Tommy Hearns in the pro.
Why?
Because Tommy became a puncher at that time. And Aaron Pryor was too wide open. He never really had a defense. And Tommy would have nailed him and knocked him out. He would never beat Tommy in the pro. He would never beat Tommy in the pro. Tommy became a different type of fighter in the pros than he was in the amateurs. He was more of a boxer. He was more of a boxer in the amateurs than he was in the pros. In the pros, he was just a killer. I mean, he was just a killer. And he would have knocked Aaron Pryor right on out, because Aaron Pryor had no defense in that at all. And that was a big problem for him. And Tommy hit with that left hook or right hand, it would have been over. It would have been over, believe me.
So Tommy Hearns is your number one welterweight of your era outside of you?
I mean the fact is Tommy, like I keep telling everybody, Tommy is number one in anybody's era. Tommy was a too many Tommy Hearns, man, like that, man. Tommy was a killer, okay? Unless you've been in the sport and been in that ring, Tommy was a killer. And Tommy would kill you at 200 pounds or 118 pounds. Tommy was a killer, and he could fight. And that's what made Tommy so threatening, because he would definitely come out them first four or five rounds. He's looking to knock you out. He's looking to put you in the graveyard. And that's
Harold,
what
Harold, 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 does Tommy Hearns beat Ray Robinson as a welterweight?
Nah.
Wow, what a rumble.
That would have been a rough call. Because Ray
Tommy Hearns' Achilles heel was the fact that his stamina was not that great.
Right, Ray can take the shot, and Ray can come back and nail the time.
So Harold, you and Dusty tell me Ray could have took a Tommy Hearns punch?
Hell yeah.
Ray Robinson had a radar with that right hand.
They told me that Ray Robinson took his hairstylist in the ring. Every round, he would put the process back together. They told me that if his manager wanted Ray to knock a fighter out, he would tell the hairstylist.
That was at the beginning. That was at the beginning. But when he got with them Tommy Bells and all them other guys, that was a different ball game.
Yeah, but they told me at first, though, that he had his hairstylist in the ring.
Yeah, that was at the beginning.
And the manager would tell the hairstylist, tell him, and he would say, Ray would come down and say, Mr. Robinson, sir,
yeah.
I don't know how to tell you this, but the gentleman that you're fighting, I can't do nothing with your hair. And Ray would say, I got it from
him. I used to see Ray fight, and I used to wonder, after a torrid exchange, rounds around, when the bell rang for the next round, he came back looking like he just started. I'm saying, how the hell did this guy's hair get so in place? So quiet. And then one of the commentators, I don't know if it was Dom Dumphy or one of them old timers, he says, Ray Robinson has his own hairstylist. And he combs him. That was his only job. He combs him as everybody's attending to his water and this, that, and the other. And I finally focused, the camera finally focused on the hairstylist combing his hair back and quaffing him. I said, I'll be there. I don't know whether that was a psychological...
Like I said, that was the beginning of his career. That was, after things got real hot and heavy, that stopped. All that stopped.
Yeah, they stopped all that, but it was cute, though.
Yeah,
part of it. Fresh.
It definitely worked for a while. Doc Stanley, Sports Dump on the Blake Griffin Network, Rainbow Hotel, Sports Dump is the show. We're back here every Sunday, 9 to 11. Justinio Baby, Lois, Harold Weston Jr., Mel, Little Coco, Howard Coke, Sal Smith, Lady A, Sea Wings, The Hoopster. We're all here. Sundays, 9 to 11 on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Dump show. And now, iPad, and now go on your cell phone, BlakeRadio.com. You can catch the show live, or you can catch us in the archives, but we're here. Gang, I guess Harold's going to let you go. Dusty's going to let you go. Harold, okay, we'll see you next Sunday.
Take care. You too.
Thanks, Harold. So I still got Dusty, I still got the Hoopster, and I still got Mel Cosell, correct?
Yeah, you do. I got one question for Harold before he goes. I know he has to go. Harold and Dusty being professional.
Harold left us, so we're left with Dusty. Go ahead, Dusty.
Hey, Dusty, quick question.
Yeah.
Was there ever anybody, an opponent that truly got under your skin before a Rumble?
Was there anybody that
truly got under your skin? I mean, a guy that you really just wanted to take out because he had so much lip and mouth. I realize Joe Thomas in yesteryear didn't wolf as much as now, but
And that was a big mistake. And I'll tell
you
why.
Why?
It was a big mistake. And I'll tell you why. Because he went the distance. I think you asked a question of Harold and myself. Let me just try to umbrella the whole thing. I never knew who I was going to fight. They told me, Dusty, you got a four-rounder in Phoenix or a six-rounder in Sunnyside or another four-rounder in Eastern Parkway. Okay, I knew I was fighting. Boom. I will report. The only time I knew who I was fighting, unless they told me his name prior, was when I got to the commission's office the day of the fight, 11:30, 12 o'clock, weigh in, the physical, and then it's a Jones Lewis 52-pound contract. Boom, report to the doctor. That's when I knew who I was fighting, okay? One time I'm sitting there minding my own business, getting ready to undress because you had a strip, and I see this guy walking around all over the place, asking people, talking to people. I never paid any mind. I just go back to my little corner and hibernate. He comes up to me and says, who are you fighting? I said, I'm fighting, what's your name? A guy named Gary Pruitt, and he's from California. Oh, that's me. So he shakes his hand and says, but you better be careful because I want to knock you out. I said, son of a bitch. So you just nailed your ass to the coffin. I never was so angry angry at being told he was going to kick my ass. I went home. I was chomping. I don't know why I let it upset me. But you know, I'm not that way. So he comes out of walk and tells him, well, I'm hitting hard this year, and I'm going to kick your ass, man. You know, you're not going to last for 4 rounds. I said, son of a bitch. I went home angry. I usually had my meal around 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock. I ate it. It just bothered me. I was angry. I usually sleep. I couldn't sleep. I was so angry. I got there an hour earlier than normally. I found my little cubby hole because this is the preliminary room. I went to the cubby hole, my little favorite area of mine. I sat down there, and I just couldn't get this dude out of my face. I was going to kill him. This is where you lose track of what you're training, how you're training. You lose sense of everything. Your playbook, you leave it somewhere. I was the third or the fourth prelim. Boom. And my trainer came in, hurry up, take me. I said, man, what's the hurry? We got time. I said, no, take me. I got dressed. Oh, not yet. What happens? We get into the ring, Baba, and as soon as the bell rang, I left everything that I trained, the way I fought, and I just rushed the dude. And bam, and bam, and bam, like a freaking street fighter. Bam, the referee told us to break. I was bam, I hit him on the break. I'm serious. And I kept pounding and pounding. What the mistake that I made was the dude, I rushed the dude, and he put his head under me, and he cut my eye. And really? That would never have happened if I had my reasons. He cut my eye in the third round, and I said, oh, and I saw the blood was coming down. I said, oh, crap. But even then, I kept hitting him, kidney shots, ripping him. The referee had to warn me twice, and you're hitting on the break. I said, okay. Fourth round, I said, okay, mother, and Blackie, and I'm going to kill you. Man, what you doing? I said, I'll kill you. And I hit him, Joe. Fight ended. Okay, to make a long story short, the fight ended, and I went back to my corner. He usually shake hands. I said, kiss my rear end. I ain't shaking your hand. No, really. That's the one time. And you know what's funny? To make a long story short, he went back to California. He became the California welterweight champ.
Really?
I said, California welterweight champ. I said, crap, man. Look at this, man. I should go to California and chase his ass. But, I mean, that's... other than that, I was never angry at anybody. I just went out there to do my job. But that's
really Sports Depth on the Blake Griner Rainbow Stone Champ Sports Depth show. It is mic on, lights off, and we're about to leave here. You've had yourself 2 hours plus. They've all been here. Mel, Little Coco, Ronnie Cosell, Destinio, Baby Lois Jr., Harold Weston Jr., back-to-back JRs, the First Lady, Lady A, Sea Wings wouldn't win tonight, but the Hoopsa was here. And the Knicks lose an overtime game that the coach kind of
again, they should have won, Doc. They snatched defeat from the jaws of victory.
Well, I always said coaches don't win games, they lose them. But we're going to be back here. It's every Sunday, 9 to 11, and check the schedule. Sometimes we make adjustments for the early moves. But we should be back here next Sunday, 9 to 11. Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow, so the channel Sports and Deficit Show. Three thoughts. If you like the day, if it's 10 before God. Lifestyle's the system. Most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Muhammad Ali, service to others is rent you pay for your space. Now, Dr. King, lifestyle's the system. Most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in times of comfort and convenience, but where he stands in times of challenge and controversy. As you know, I'm off to Brazil into this year. DocSundaySports.com, the trust in God, Sports Death Hall of Fame. Take a look. Everything is available. And without further ado, Mel Cosell and Dusty will tell us good night. They're back here next week. The great line of Walt Whitman. I no doubt deserve enemies, but these people, I desire to deserve them amount of friends. Trust in God. From the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. Larry Hardesty will close out, and then the last voice you will hear will be that of an alien, that of a green card, that of a man who deserted his country.
Destino, baby,
love. Do I go across the border, Patron? Patron, please don't deport me, Patron. I do not work for you.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake
Radio Network. Have a great day.
Okay, Dusty, tell everybody good night.
Buenas noches, everybody. God bless, and let's get together again, and let's be comprehensive in all that we do so we can make it even better. If it was good today, let's make it better next week. And that's it. Good night, and God bless. Take care. All right.
Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Depth of the Show. Panel members, Mel, Lil Coco, Cosell Smith Jr., Lady A, Destinio Baby Lewis, Harold Weston Jr., Raymond Sea Wings, Cedric Raymond Sea Wings, Lewis Hart, and the Doctor, Doc Stanley. One more time, the attendance. Harold Weston Jr., Destino Baby Lewis Jr., Mel Smith Jr., Lady A, Cedric Raymond, Lewis Hart, and Doc Stanley. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports in Depth is a show. Hello to Elaine Letterman. And once again, the significant feat today, Harold Weston Jr. talked about it, and we will talk about it one more time. March 2nd, 1960, Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points against the New York Knickerbockers. That same night, 28 out of 32 for the free throw line, and he became the first and only man ever to score 100 points in a basketball game. Chamberlain, too, is the only man to average 50 points a game an entire season, along with 25 rebounds. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network. From the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. DocStanleySports.com, trust in God, Sports in Depth, Entertainment, Sports Hall of Fame. Trust in God.